All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
On my papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and light me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And we're here until 5. It's Tuesday. Hey, man, two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. One artist, two songs, two for Tuesday. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Hey, coming up on the show, after 1:30, our good friend Lindsey Cochran is going to join us live in studio. And on the phone, we'll have Scott Tipping, who is a guitarist. They are both members of Great Moments in Vinyl. This is this great tribute band that has amazing musicians, and they pay tribute to specific albums and specific artists. And they do that all the time. And coming up this Saturday, they're going to be paying tribute to the 50th anniversary of Led Zeppelin 1 and Led Zeppelin 2. And they're going to be performing that at Martyrs, which is their sort of home base. Martyrs at 3855 North Lincoln Avenue. And we're going to talk Zeppelin. And continuing to talk Zeppelin, Rolling Stone put together their list of the 40 greatest Led Zeppelin songs of all time. The definitive guide to Zeppelin's finest recorded moments. So we're going to talk Zeppelin this morning. And if you have a favorite Zeppelin song or a favorite Zeppelin memory, there's a lot to be said about this. And Rolling Stone put together their definitive list of Led Zeppelin songs. So lots of Led Zeppelin talk this morning. And we are also going to talk about the best ice cream in Chicago. Where do you guys go to get your best ice cream in Chicago? And, of course, some very weird pop culture coincidences that that Cracked.com has put together. Some of these are kind of mind-blowing. There are some very, very weird pop culture coincidences that happen. So we will discuss that as well. Phone lines are always open. Text lines are always open. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Talk, text, and, of course, your Two for Tuesday requests.
Yeah!
So there you go. And you can also follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. It's updated, it's interactive, and you should like us and follow us on Facebook right now, facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, let me say hello to the crew here working with me this morning, and it's my great producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing great, Nick. How are you?
I'm all right. How about that Barry finale?
That's one of the most violent episodes I feel like they've done.
He kills like 80 people.
In the episode. He goes a little John Wick.
It's a little crazy. It's very, very crazy. Hader directed it, and it ends on a massive sort of like, oh my God, the very final moment. Yeah.
It's just sad that the season had to wrap up the same time that Game of Thrones did.
Yeah.
So now, you know, I can look forward to John Oliver on Sunday nights.
Yeah, but, well, John Oliver's off next week because it's Memorial Day.
Naturally.
So he takes another week off. I wish John Oliver wasn't on just once a week. I mean, yeah. But the reason why he's on once a week is because, I mean, they do such thorough writing and research that it does take a week to put that half hour show together, even though he covers only like one or two subjects.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Oh man, did you watch it last night? Did you watch last night's?
I did not get the chance. I know what it's about, right? It's about autopsies and death reports,
death investigations.
Oh my goodness,
it's pretty terrifying.
Yeah,
it's pretty terrifying. And there's also this Nordic band that he is currently sort of obsessed with, that was on Euro, the European version of America's Got Talent, sort of like a Euro version or whatever it is.
A little bit like Eurovision.
Yeah, that's what it is. Eurovision.
Oh, it was Eurovision.
Yeah, Eurovision.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're this band. You got to see these guys. You got to see these guys.
Like heavy metal?
To believe it. It's hard to describe. It's just hard to describe. So, but that segment is just hilarious, too. But yeah, no, it was strong. I mean, it was the death investigation thing was really just like, ooh. Yeah, not good. But anyway, John Oliver rules. But yeah, Barry, it's over. It's for this season. It's been renewed, which is good, because if they didn't renew it and it ended the way it ended, people would not be happy. So, all right. Yeah, so finales continued. And now that Big Little Lies is coming back in June, they've added Meryl. Like, they needed more star power. They've added Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep is now on the show. So that's always, that was a good first season.
Absolutely.
Even though it was only supposed to be, it won all the awards under miniseries.
Yeah.
You know, and then they go, oh, there's going to be a season two, so they can win more Emmys.
I felt like that was one that was only supposed to, be the one season.
It's based on a book. Yeah. It's based on a book that has a definitive ending. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So they get snag Meryl Streep to get in there amongst some of the best actresses on the planet. So, that'll be fun to watch. That's the next sort of big HBO thing. My future ex-wife is coming on to a show. The lovely Dana DiLorenzo, who will be on the show. When is she going to be on?
She's going to be on Tuesday.
Tuesday, week from today. My future ex-wife, the lovely Dana DiLorenzo, who you know from Ash vs. Evil Dead, and from this show, and that she's my future ex-wife. She's going to be on to talk about this new show called Perpetual Grace Limited, which is from Steve Conrad, who created Patriot and wrote The Weatherman, wrote and directed The Promotion with John C. Reilly and Stifler. I feel so bad.
Sean
William Scott, right?
Yeah, Sean William Scott.
Okay, I'm so bad. I feel really bad that I always refer to him as Stifler.
And it's hard. It's an iconic role.
But I mean, it is an iconic role, but he's a good actor. I mean, I mean, look, hey, listen, you know, Southland Tales. He's so great in that movie, and I love him in The Promotion. He's fantastic in The Promotion. But anyway, that Steve Conrad created it, and it's got an all-star cast: Jackie Weaver, Ben Kingsley, Jimmy Simons, Louis Guzman, who I believe Dana, my future ex-wife, is the love interest, or at least the mistress. That he's got, so she gets to work very closely with Louis Guzman.
Good for Louis Guzman.
Good for Louis Guzman. And so anyway, we'll have Dana on, and that show starts on Sunday next, a week from Sunday, June 2nd. It starts Perpetual Grace. It's on Epix, which I didn't subscribe to until now because Dana's on the show. I didn't subscribe to Stars until Ash versus Evil Dead. So Dana's responsible for me subscribing for, you know, to premium cable channels that I didn't subscribe to unless she was on.
She's a selling point.
She is everything about her is a selling point as far as I'm concerned. So anyway, she'll be on the show a week from this morning. All right, let's go into the newsroom. It's Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
Hey, pretty good, sir. How are you?
All right, I'm okay. Did you see any of that tragic Cubs game?
Yeah, I watched it from the beginning, and then I missed the end because I had to shower and come to work. And so by the time I got here, well, actually, I take that back. The game was still on. They went into extra innings. It was still on when I got here.
It went into extra innings.
Unfortunate loss.
It was a really painful.
It was looking like a great win.
Yeah, a great comeback win.
Pretty late in the game, too.
Yeah, they were down 3-1. They came back, got the lead 4-3.
Descalzo Descalzo.
He's,
man,
yeah.
I had a good feeling when I saw him at bat. He does some great stuff, you know.
He does.
His play.
He had a triple.
Yeah.
They tried to throw him out at third.
Two run triple, and then
the ball hit him.
Yep.
And then he was sent home.
Yeah,
they took the lead 4-3. But then they didn't hold it. And it's a very questionable. There was a very questionable call of a ball instead of a strike. You know, and they did the check of a check swing, and he broke the plane. It was a strike, but you can't argue balls and strikes. You can't argue. It was a bad call by the umps. But I don't want to sound, you know, petty because it was a bad call by the umps. You know, the Cubs still blew the game.
Yeah. I think reporters asked Madden about that after the game too.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
They would have won. He would have struck him out, and that would have been the game. So it was a kind of a crucial bad call. But anyway, they lost. But that's okay. They can't win every game. Philadelphia's a really good team, too. So, I mean, they play again tonight. But tonight, they start an hour earlier.
Let me ask you, what did you think about Arrieta? I mean, Darvish had a good game.
They both did. And they both got wiped out by the bullpens. neither of them got a decision because of the bullpens. I love Jake Arrieta. And you knew he was going to get that kind of response from the crowd.
That was cool.
Listen, he won two games for the Cubs in the World Series. He won a Cy Young in a Cub uniform. He was one of the strongest pitchers in Cubs history, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. And it was a really nice response that he got. When he came up to bat, the whole place went nuts, and he tipped his helmet.
He did. He took his hat off to the crowd, and he gave a good. I think it was a tweet before the game where he, kind of tipped his hat to Chicago before he even got here, saying that he couldn't wait to get back. He loved Wrigley Field. He loved the city,
it was a great run for him, and with the Cubs uniform on.
Sure was.
Could have done without the naked pictures.
You didn't like those?
No, it's fine. And then Javi did that too, right? Didn't Javi pose naked too?
Yeah, I think he did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Got to give something to the, something special for the fans.
I'll say it's funny. Elizabeth Moss, who, is my favorite actor right now, favorite actress working right now, she. Has given the best performance of the year in this movie called Her Smell, which is no longer out, but when it was available on Blu-ray, you should all get it. It's an amazing performance, obviously from Handmaid's Tale and so much more. Us and I don't know if you know this or not, Tom, but she is a massive Cub fan.
Really? Is she from here?
Yeah. She spent time here.
Okay.
And she is a massive Cub fan. Ridiculous Cub fan. She sang the seventh inning stretch three times. There was a picture of her on the set of Handmaid's Tale when they were finishing up season one of Handmaid's Tale. And, if you haven't seen Handmaid's Tale, it's pretty brutal. But there's a scene late in the season, the first season, where she gets smacked around and she's got bruises and cuts all over her face. And I'm not laughing at that, but there's a picture of her on the set. With all the makeup on her face, all cut up. She's got the bonnet on, but she's wearing a World Championship Cubs t-shirt, and she's got the biggest smile on her face. It's one of my favorite pictures ever. She's just beside herself. But when somebody sent her, because there was a gif of a shirtless Rizzo, because Rizzo's her favorite. She loves Rizzo. There was a gif of a shirtless Rizzo just like with a baseball glove on and a ball just kind of like throwing the ball into the glove and back and forth, shirtless, and it just repeats over and over again because it's a GIF. And she said someone sent it, and it was the greatest GIF she's ever gotten in her life. But yeah, Elizabeth Moss, massive Cub
fan.
Big
Cub fan.
Another reason to love her. Okay. So speaking of very Chicago things, this is one, maybe you can even chime in on this one, Vic. I don't know if you have an opinion on this. You spent a significant amount of time now here in Chicago. Once and for all, is it L, capital E, small l, or is it L, lowercase e, l, or is it the letter capital L or quote-unquote capital L when referring to the trains?
I'm going to defer to Tom because he's born and raised in this area. I have an opinion on this. But
so I was born in Chicago, did not grow up in Chicago. And I was always told it was just the letter, big capital L.
Okay. All right. Now, I grew up, by the way, the house that I grew up in, the apartment that I grew up in, was right next to an L station. The Addison L stop was right. So I've this is ingrained. Now, there are arguments for either of these. There are arguments for either of them. Everybody hang on, okay, because we're gonna try and settle this. And Chicago Magazine wrote a piece about this, about what is it? Is it L-E-L? Is it capital E-L? Is it the letter L? Is it the quote-unquote L, capital L? How do you refer to the L, meaning the elevated trains, the CTA trains? So we're going to take that on. And then after 1:30, Lindsey Cochran and Scott Tipping are going to join us from Great Moments in Vinyl to talk Zeppelin. All right. right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday.
You hear me, 2 for Tuesday?
Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're going to be talking with Lindsey Cochran and Scott Tipping from Great Moments in Vinyl. They're going to be performing Led Zeppelin and Led Zeppelin 2 this Saturday at Martyrs, and we're going to talk to them about that gig and Great Moments in Vinyl in general. And then we're going to continue to talk about Zeppelin because Rolling Stone put together their 40 greatest Zeppelin songs of all time. We're going to talk about pop culture coincidences and some of the best ice cream that you can get in Chicago. So that's all coming up. So how exactly do you spell the name of the trains that travel around the city on elevated tracks? It's a debate that goes back to the 1890s here in Chicago when the system began operating, and it turns out to be even Chicago's greatest authors disagree. James T. Farrell, author of the Studs Lonegan trilogy, probably the most Chicago set of books ever written, refers to it as the L, as in E-L, with the word E-L. Studs glanced around for a woman, wondering if he'd ever never thought of the possibilities of getting against one in crowded L trains, E-L. So short for elevated.
Is that uppercase E or lowercase?
It's the lowercase. He's doing the lowercase, yeah. Okay. So too did Nelson Algren, whose name adorns a short story prize awarded each year by the Chicago Tribune. Though he disagreed with Farrell on the capitalization, he capitalized it. This was in The Man with the Golden Arm. The Logan Square L rumbled up from the spring's last snow. He uses the capital E, lowercase L. Gwendolyn Brooks, for many years, the poet laureate of Illinois, used a different spelling in her poem of DeWitt Williams on his way to Lincoln Cemetery, which appears in her collection, The Street in Bronzeville. It's underneath the L, she says, and it's capital L. So the argument continues. Now, here's what I will say. Okay, I've always thought it was EL. And I wasn't really specific on whether it's lowercase or capital. I just always thought it was EL because it seems the most logical because it's short for elevated. But the CTA officially uses the capital L. I think with the quotes around it. That's what the CTA uses. So I guess you got to go by what the CTA uses. But all these years, you know, when you say L, you know what you mean. If you're from Chicago, you know what you mean. I'm going to take the L downtown. But it's just a question of how you do it, how you talk about it. You know, it's different when you do it in print. So which one do you gravitate towards the most?
I think the capital L, and that's probably because at the end of the day, I grew up in the suburbs, and while my mom is from here and my grandparents live here, they just probably use that CTA. And it always confused me because I was just like, what does that mean? What is L, just the letter L? And then when I was like, oh, it's for elevated tracks, I was like, why isn't it EL?
Right.
And I wonder, it makes me wonder how that came about, just the letter L.
I'm not really sure, because it sounds like L. I mean, you know, E-L sounds, it's L. But, I mean, for me, logically, it should be E-L. That's always the way, like, if I ever wrote it out, I would put the E in front of the L. But, you know, I mean, if you look online and you go to the CTA website or you go to an L stop.
Yeah, it's the L.
It's the L. It's just a capital L. Mm-hmm. So it's always been a debate, though. And I love the fact that they traced it back to some of the most, you know, legendary writers from Illinois and Chicago about how to actually refer to the L.
Now, you said Gwendolyn Brooks did just the letter.
Yes, capital L.
You know what? I'll be on Gwendolyn Brooks' side. I love Gwendolyn Brooks. I don't mind having her backing me up.
Okay. All right. And by the way, Chicago Magazine says, for this magazine, for what it's worth, we also use capital L. So, well, that debate's going to continue. So many people, by the way, this article is in Chicago Magazine. You can go to chicagomag.com to read it. And a lot of people are quoted in the argument and the discussion from lifelong Chicagoans continues. But I personally, it's E-L-L. That's what I think, short for elevated. But I can't argue with the CTA. We'll refer to it with the capital letter L. So these are important things that we need to argue about in this city. Okay, we're going to break here. We got the news coming up next, and then after that, Lindsey Cochran and Scott Tipping from Great Moments in Vinyl are going to start our discussion about Led Zeppelin, which we will be celebrating this morning right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We are here until 5 a.m. We're going to talk about pop culture coincidences. Right now, we want to welcome to the studio, and we also have another guest on the phone. What you just heard there was rehearsal audio of Great Moments in Vinyl, which is a group of musicians who get together and organized by Lindsey Cochran, and they do tributes to great bands and music and albums and stuff like that. And they're doing Led Zeppelin. I can't believe 50th anniversary of Led Zeppelin and Led Zeppelin II.
Does that not make you feel old?
Oh my God, it makes me feel very, very old. And it's amazing that those two albums came out the same year.
I know. Oh my gosh. In short order, the second album, they recorded while on tour.
I mean,
they were touring back and forth in America. I mean, talk about how times change. I think the first album came out, and my figures are not exact here, but let's say they toured America 5 times that year. I mean, what band does that in a single year?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was a busy time, obviously, for Led Zeppelin.
And a very lucrative one, as
yeah.
And other things as well.
Exactly. And there's a lot of stories behind Led Zeppelin, and that's what you guys get into, this kind of stuff. Led Zeppelin and Led Zeppelin II, Great Moments in Vinyl at Martyrs, 3855 North Lincoln, this Saturday. It's $15 to get in. And Lindsey, thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
I appreciate
it.
Tell everybody about Great Moments in Vinyl, as we do every time we have you in.
Well, as you said earlier, it's about great bands, great music, great albums. You know, I thought it would be great to just get together in a club with musicians who love to play this music for fans who love to hear it.
Yeah.
So we find an album that we know is very popular and takes people back and has meaning to people, like we just did Pearl Jam's 10.
Right.
I mean, that was a lot of fun. We got a Prince show coming up with Purple Rain. We did Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, the Elton John album, back in December. We're going to chance to do that one again. This time out, I thought, 50 years ago in 1969, that's when Led Zeppelin and Led Zeppelin II came out, or as I've been calling them, Led Zeppelin 1 and 2, not the true names of the albums. But we're going to put those albums on stage with Judith Weirich, the vocalist who sang the Physical Graffiti show with us. People are just blown away with her. She was my Janis Joplin when we did Pearl years ago.
And that was her that we just heard.
Yes. Yes.
On how many more times?
Absolutely. You know, as I like to say, Led Zeppelin was a guy's band, but if you have to find an audience of guys that mind watching Judith sing Robert Plant, you know, it's like...
Yeah. Well, it's hard to find a male vocalist who can do Robert Plant.
Especially.
It's very difficult, especially in that time period when Robert Plant still had incredible chops. Well, we always have you on, and now we have Scott Tipping on, who's been on the show before.
Yes.
And he's on over the phone. Scott, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely,
good to be here.
Absolutely. Give everybody a little background on yourself, Scott.
I'm 5'8". I'm a Chicago guitarist. I've been very fortunate to keep myself occupied with a ton of different local bands and touring bands and stuff like that, and super honored to do multiple shows with Great Moments in Vinyl.
What were some of your favorites that you've done with these guys?
Physical Graffiti.
That
to me is the Zeppelin stuff really hits home for me. That's a lot of my upbringing.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it when when I was waiting for you guys to come on. I actually remember taking Communication Breakdown to my dad, who's a guitarist, and asking him, how does this work? Like, listening to the guitar solo, can you teach me this? So the Zeppelin stuff is my favorite. Goodbye Yellow Brick Road was awesome, too. Just seeing that pulled off was pretty great.
Yeah.
Everyone is special in its own way, but Zeppelin really hits home.
Yeah, I can understand. Zeppelin was a big part of my growing up as well.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Scott, but weren't you the guy, like, sitting in his bedroom working on that stuff way back when?
I was listening to it constantly, and it kind of seeped in through osmosis, so I did sit down and learn it a lot, but I think a lot of it was just because it was always on that it just sort of became familiar to my language, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you guys are playing my favorite Zeppelin album, which is Zeppelin 2.
Why is that?
Yeah.
The thing about Zeppelin 2 is that it kind of represents everything that they could do as a band. Mm-hmm. Because it's a very, very varied album.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's some blues songs on there. There's some folk songs on there. There's, you know... heavy stuff on there. Yeah. There's a song with a drum solo on it, a studio song with a drum solo on it, and what my friend says about that though, I have a friend who's not crazy about Moby Dick. he says because he's like, why would they even do that? It's so self indulgent, and I'm like, well, because John Bonham was the greatest drummer ever, so let him go. But my friend always says this, and I don't agree with him. I don't agree with this statement at all. But this is what he says: it's a waste of a perfectly good riff.
I've got a good story to go with Moby Dick, but you'll have to come to the show to hear it.
Oh, okay. All right. Very, very cool. All right. Cool.
Not radio worthy.
No. Well, yeah. There's not a lot about Zeppelin. Have you ever read Hammer of the Gods?
No.
Yes.
My God. Yeah.
I was going to quote extensively from it later.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Please. Please do. But I mean, there's more of the stuff that these guys allegedly did. Hammer of the Gods is just one of the best sort of like shameless rock and roll books of all time.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, I mean, this isn't fair to bring this up, but during the Physical Graffiti show, there's a story I tell about one of the managers saying, what doesn't get talked about is the times they were on tour and it was boring.
Yeah.
There was nothing going on, you know? Like, they were worried about how their wives would see them in photos and how they look so worn out and things like that. You know, it wasn't crazy all the time.
Right. Well, that's the stories that become legend. You know, are the ones that involve seafood and hotel rooms and stuff like that.
I read that book. I'm sorry, I read that book when I was a teenager, and that was like a what?
Yeah, no, I read it. I think I was a teenager when I read it too. I think when it came out, I was like 17 or 18 when I read it. When it came out, but no, yeah, that was quite a read. How much of Led Zeppelin are you going to talk about, Lindsay, on stage?
Oh well, like it's a little tricky, obviously, because some of these songs segue together, so that kills a spot for me to chat. But I try to tell a story about, you know, what was going on for the band with the first album, or what Plant was thinking when he wrote this song, or you know, what Moby Dick, where that title came from, you know, according to the books, it's not what you might think.
Yeah, so you know, it's funny because like you mentioned that some songs segue. I remember I was at Rolling Stones Records at Harlem and Irving. Have you ever been up there?
Oh yeah.
I used to go there all the time when they had vinyl and stuff like that and CD. And we were in there shopping one day, and Heartbreaker was playing they were playing Heartbreaker, and it didn't segue into Live and Love and Made. And I went, whoa! So
how
I actually
that?
Went, I, but they had it on shuffle. So I actually went
up. Oh, it was a CD. Okay,
I went up to the counter and I'm like, you can't play Heartbreaker without playing Live and Love and Made. You know, and I've never heard that even on FM rock stations. They play both of them. They play them back to back because you have to. You have to. If I don't hear the opening note, if I don't hear him start singing "Live in Love and Made" immediately when "Heartbreaker" is over, I'm like, what's going on in the world?
Well, apparently Paige doesn't like that song. So when they've done "Heartbreaker" in concert, they don't go into "Live in Love and Made." From what I've heard,
is that right?
That's what the research shows.
Okay. All right.
Well, it
just doesn't work on the studio. Like when you grow up listening to Zeppelin II, and you know like every note of every single song.
I know.
If you don't hear "Live in Love and Made" begin, you go, "What's happening?"
That was the agony of us early adopters of iTunes.
Yeah,
you get those songs. It's supposed to say like the Sneakin' Sally Through the Alley, Robert Palmer medley. You know, suddenly it's like you had to buy three songs,
right?
And you had a gap between them.
Like, right. Those are the good old days when you had to actually listen to albums.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Well, that's what Great Moments in Vinyl is about. Because when we play an album, we play all of it. We play even the tracks you sat through and dealt with. We need to get
when
to
you guys did the White Album. You did Revolution Number 9. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, so we that's did. That. We found a way to do it.
Yeah. So who's in the band this time?
Well, Scott, obviously on guitar. Got Judith Weirich singing. Let me see. Alton Smith, who's worked with us before.
Oh, yeah.
He's done some Led Zeppelin shows with us. He was my Elton John many years ago. He's done all sorts of great stuff. But anyway, he's our utility infielder, I guess, to speak the WGN sports language.
Yeah.
I mean, because he's playing keyboards on this. So that means piano. That means organ. He's singing harmony vocals. I think he's going to pick up a guitar. When we do Ramble On, we need someone to do the acoustic rhythm guitar. And how am I blanking out on this? Whole Lot of Love.
Mm-hmm.
He has a special guest vocal appearance.
Oh, he does. Oh, Yeah, so that's him. He does that.
He does the pre-echo.
Yeah, he does the pre
as we call it.
Well, that's cool. So that's it? That's the whole band?
Oh, and then Jonathan Reed on drums, who's played with us before. He's a monster. Yeah. I mean, he was in the Pearl Jam show, the Paul Simon show, the past Zeppelin shows.
How'd the Pearl Jam show go?
Oh, Pearl Jam is, Scott will agree. I mean, that's tough music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as someone, I don't know who said it in the band, but it's not music you can just jam through. You know, you just can't fudge it. You know, like if you're a guitarist, you know how you go from the A chord to the D chord. There are certain ways you can get from one to the other. Can't do that with Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
You have to just go right there or play what they played. I mean, it's idiosyncratic, like, say, Pete Townsend music with The Who. You know, there are very specific notes you have to be fingering on that guitar. You just can't hit a chord.
Yeah.
So the show went well. But, oh, my gosh, a lot of sweat went into putting that one together.
Yeah, yeah. So, Scott, were you in that one?
Yes, I was. And he's absolutely right. There was, you know, I know a lot of that music well, but haven't played it before.
Yeah.
So when I saw the set list, I was like, yeah, no problem. And then when I sat down to learn it, it's like, it's a bar of what?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Scott, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, Scott Tipping is with us. He's playing guitar. Lindsey Cochran is with us in studio. And Great Moments in Vinyl will pay tribute to the 50th anniversary of Zeppelin and Zeppelin II at Martyrs this Saturday night. Lindsey, hang on. We're going to come back. When we come back, you got a couple of Zeppelin stories, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. Lindsey Cochran from Great Moments in Vinyl here in studio, and we'll be back to talk more after this on 720 WGN. Great Moments in Vinyl playing Led Zeppelin, and they will be at Martyrs this Saturday night. Showtime is at 9 o'clock. It's $15 to get in. Martyrs is on Lincoln Avenue, 3855 North Lincoln in Chicago, and they will be Great Moments in Vinyl will be playing Led Zeppelin and Led Zeppelin II. In studio with me is Lindsey Cochran, who plays the bass and tells the story, stories and organizes the musicians. And on the phone with us is Scott Tipping, who will be playing guitar evening. Scott, is Paige one of your favorite guitarists of all time?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I grew up in a time period, it was strange, because Paige in the 70s, late 60s, Yardbirds and all that, and 70s, you know, was just this heroic guitar figure. And then growing up in like the 80s and 90s, a lot of guitarists started to bag him because of his sloppier leads and stuff. And I was insulted. Because, you know, he was beyond a soloist. The thing about Jimmy Page to me, outside of his outstanding playing and innovative playing, was he was a composer. And if you listen to the guitar arrangements and the overdubs and stuff, I mean, nobody can touch him.
He produced the records, too. That's the thing.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, he was a master in the studio as well, and one of the greatest guitarists that ever lived. There's no question about it.
Now, no question.
I was lucky enough to have seen Zeppelin. I saw him twice.
Wow.
I saw him in 75, and they were...
We are not worthy.
They were... Well, wait, get Pettengale in here, and let's talk about Woodstock.
Oh, that's true.
I saw them in 75, and they were amazing. In 77, they were terrible. They were loaded when they came out on stage.
75, that would have been the Physical Graffiti Tour?
Yeah, Physical Graffiti Tour, 75. Presence was 77. Yeah. And so, so the 75 tour was unbelievable. It was incredible. They played almost 3 hours Chicago Stadium. They always played the stadium. They always played at least 4 nights at the Chicago Stadium. And then they came back in 1977. We went again. It was terrible. Paige did most of the show from a folding chair because he was so loaded. The only sober person on that stage was John Paul Jones.
Right.
He was the only sober person on the stage. Plant came out, and like a lot of you guys know, Plant had this sort of tradition of coming out with a bottle of Jack. He'd break the seal on the bottle and start drinking it throughout the show. That night in 77, he came out, the bottle was almost 3/4 of the way empty already. And that was at the top of the show. So it was a disaster. That's the thing about that band, though, was a live band. They were kind of notorious. You never knew what you were going to get. Were you going to get loaded bad Zeppelin or sober great Zeppelin?
Well, I guess Presence was made with Plant in a wheelchair, right? I think he had had a car accident or something like that. So he was not in fine form for the making of that album. And as I tell on the Physical Graffiti show, I mean, there was a falling out among the band members when Robert Plant's son Carrick had died, and the story goes that only Bonham came to the funeral.
Yeah,
Peter Grant did not come. The manager did not come. Jimmy didn't come. John Paul Jones didn't attend. And Plant felt that as just a slight.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, here I'm mourning the loss of my son, and you guys are not supporting me. Yeah. And from that time going forward, Robert Plant was just like, you know, I'll be in this band if I want to be in this band.
Yeah. Yeah, and the way the band ended, you know, obviously with Bonham's death is very, very tragic. A lot of tragedy hit that band. There was a lot of tragedy involved in the history of the band.
Yeah.
And
they had such a great start. You know, they were like bulletproof at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, I think just life finally caught up with them. You know, they thought they were, what's the
invincible.
Word?
Invincible.
Invincible.
Yeah.
And life proved they weren't.
Yeah. Well, great band, and what they've left,
absolutely,
you know, what they have contributed to music is insane.
I mean, you know, as people say, the Beatles were to the 60s, Zeppelin was to the 70s.
No question.
They set the tone, they set the direction, they set
a
lot of attitudes.
So what kind of stuff are you going to be talking about at
Here's
the show
a great
on
story.
Saturday?
Here's a new one I ran across online. Former Yardbird brings new group here. That's the headline of a 1969 press release announcing the imminent appearance of Jimmy Page's new band in Boston with a sound they described as contemporary blues, quote, raw and basic, something everyone can relate to. Mm-hmm. And so the newly christened Led Zeppelin was coming to America. And according to John Paul Jones, that January 69 date at the Boston Tea Party, as it was known, was a moment of realization for the band. Jonesy told NME in an interview years later, as far as I'm concerned, the key Zeppelin gig, the one that put everything into focus, was one that we played on our first American tour at the Boston Tea Party. We'd played our usual one-hour set using all the material for the first album and Page's white summer guitar piece, that instrumental he did with the Yardbirds. And by the end, the audience just wouldn't let us off stage. It was in such a state that in the band, we had to start throwing our ideas around, just thinking of songs that we might all know or that some of us knew part of and work it out from there. So we'd go back on and play things like I Saw Her Standing There and Please Please Me, old Beatles favorites. I mean, just anything that would come into our heads. And the response was amazing. There were kids actually bashing their heads against the stage. I'd never seen that at a gig before or since. And when we finally left the stage, we'd played for 4+ hours.
Wow. Wow.
You want the kicker? Steven Tyler of Aerosmith was at this show, and he said that he cried during Dazed and Confused because he couldn't believe how heavy it was. And he also said it was one of the only two shows he's ever attended where he sat with his mouth open the entire time.
A very young Steven Tyler at that point.
Well, you've seen his mouth. So that's quite a...
Yeah. Wow, that's a great story. That's a great story.
And I tell stories like that between the songs just to illuminate what was going on for the band.
Now, in your research, is it true that Keith Moon gave them the idea for the name of the band?
That's disputed.
Is that disputed? Yeah.
Well, I mean, the story is that both Moon and Entwistle were involved, but who actually came up with the idea and who actually said it. That's in dispute.
Because they said, I've heard this rumor for, you know, years, that they were at a party or something.
Page was excited about this new band.
Right.
He was describing it to these members of The Who, and their reaction was, from one of them, that'll go over like a lead balloon, like a Led Zeppelin.
And then that's where the name came from, or at least that's what the...
The spelling was lead, like the element lead.
Mm-hmm.
But Page said to himself, those are Americans. They'd think it's Led Zeppelin.
Right.
I mean, we are the people that call it Dire Maker, after all.
That's true. Very, very true. Scott, what were some of the most challenging songs for you to learn for the gig?
Oh, for this one, Black Mountainside, which is, you know, based off that Burt Jantz Black Water side. That's in a weird tuning, or not the weirdest, but it's in Dad Gag, and it has a couple of little things that, again, it's like he makes it sound really easy. It's not at all. There's also like there's some breaks in like How Many More Times, where it's like, you know, traditionally things will break on the one and the whole band is breaking on the four. And,
exactly.
Zeppelin
has done that throughout their career. I mean, if you look at if you look at Rock and Roll, the song Rock and Roll, that's the weirdest. I mean, you know, the weirdest breaks I've ever heard in a song.
By the way, where that came from, and I don't know if it's a tape thing or whatever, but if you dig that intro, you really should go back to Little Richard's Keep a Knockin'.
Oh, sure.
Right? That's where Bonham got it from. It's the end of three. I think that's Earl Palmer playing, or I can't remember. But yeah, I mean, you're right. That's one of those songs that everybody tried to learn
and
in their parents' garage and then thought, what is this?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Absolutely.
It is very, 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 very hard.
A lot of tricky songs. Yeah. Take a listen to A Day in the Life sometime.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, we were talking, my favorite Zeppelin album is Zeppelin II. My favorite song on that album is What Is and What Should Never Be, which is one of my all-time favorite Zeppelin songs.
That's
my favorite Zeppelin
song
of all time, though, was On Graffiti. And it's 10 years gone. That's my favorite Zeppelin song of all time. But man, what is and what should never be is right up there. I adore that song. Is that a fun one to play?
Did I tell you the story with that one?
Yes.
I'm gonna cut you off, Scott. Go ahead and talk.
No, it's incredibly fun to play.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have much more to add to that, but I agree with you. I feel like I love the first record, but I feel like sort of like what you're saying is that the second record, everything just started to come into place, especially with the songwriting. It wasn't, you know, there was less of the knockoff blues stuff.
Right,
what is and what
right.
should never be? There's some kind of different changes and stuff in there that's really neat.
Well, you know, I mean, that's where Robert Plant first started writing songs, too. I mean, that album were two songs that he'd written lyrics to, Thank You being one of them.
Another great song.
And What Is and What Should Never Be, a song. Well, at that time, Robert Plant, it was a woman he really had the hots for and wanted to marry, and she said no, and he kept pursuing her, and she kept saying no. So he married another woman, settled down with her, and as time went on, he kept thinking about that first woman and how he still had the hots for her, and I want to get together with you, and babe, let's do it. And so he did.
Yeah.
Well, at least he considered it. It was his wife's younger sister.
Right.
What is and what should never be.
Exactly. Wow. But it is such a fantastic song. And man, Zeppelin II is good.
Yes.
It's just a great record.
Yeah.
So it's the first one. The first one is obviously fantastic. Recorded in notoriously 8 hours or something
For $30,000 $12,000 I think in today's money is what
incredible.
36 hours I think was the time.
Insane.
Yeah. Yeah,
it is.
All right. Listen, hey, Scott, always a pleasure to talk to you, man. Have fun on Saturday,
thanks,
all right?
All right.
All right,
there's
Scott Tipping. And Lindsay, always great to have
you. Thank you, sir.
Anytime you guys have a gig, what's coming up? You said Prince?
Oh, man.
Prince is coming up?
I got a stack of papers. There's a Prince show. That's the next one. We're doing that at the Edgewater Artists in Motion at 1101 West Granville. That's the Friday, first Friday of June.
Okay.
Then coming after that, what are we up to? The end of June, we're playing at 210 Live. We just did Physical Graffiti. They loved us so much doing Zeppelin. They want us back doing our Elton John Goodbye Yellow Brick Road show.
Oh, great, great.
That's 210 Live. That's the end of the month of June. 13th of July, if I'm not mistaken, we're going to be out at Joliet, the Joliet Area Historical Museum, doing Hot Rocks.
Wow.
They loved us when we did the Rolling Stones out there. So we're going to be doing one of the rooftop concerts. It's great playing this music outdoors. And then at the end of July, toward the end of the month, MeTV-FM, where I work these days, is having us play a Woodstock tribute.
Oh, that's great.
They're bringing in a Woodstock photographer, Baron Wolman, who used to work with Rolling Stone magazine. He shot Woodstock for the magazine back in the day. So we're going to be doing tunes from Woodstock. And a longtime guitarist I work with, Richard Pettengill, whom you mentioned earlier, was at Woodstock, wrote a book about it. He'll be a part of the storytelling.
When's his book come out?
He's still working on, because he's going to write a follow-up about going to the event, if it actually takes place this year. And that'll be the epilogue.
Okay. All right. Very, very cool. Well, you're busy, man. You're keeping busy.
Oh, my Lord, am I busy.
Yeah, very, very cool. It's always great to have you on.
While more visas and mad hatters, sons of bankers, sons of lawyers, turn around and say good morning to the night. For unless they see the sky.
Oh, welcome back, everybody. Two for Tuesday.
Yeah, baby, two for Tuesday.
Who chose the Elton John?
That was Sam.
Sam, picking some Elton John. All right. Hey, speaking of music, real quick, Vic. Vic, we want to talk a little bit about this really quickly to set this up. Now, Vic, you, like Patty Vasquez, you have a pretty minimal knowledge of music.
You could use the word appalling. That's Patty's. That she coined that. But yeah, I do. I do.
Yeah. I had heard. I did not know this about you. I knew it about Patty. And like whenever they quiz Patty on music, I scream at the radio. I scream the artist. I scream the numbers, and I just scream like, "How do you not know this song?"
Yeah, that's me too.
And yeah,
it's,
I didn't know that about you, mm-hmm. and you are, but you are actively doing something about that. You got the, was it the top 100 albums from Rolling Stone?
According
magazine?
To Rolling Stone, yeah. They have a list of, it's the top 100. They also have a top 500, but I'm focusing on the top 100.
So, you decided I'm going to listen to these albums, and I'm going to educate mm-hmm. myself on music that I should know, that everybody else knows, and that is considered the greatest music of all time.
Yep. I started at 100, and I've listened to 45 albums in the last little over 2 weeks.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really just mostly when I'm at work, but also once I leave work, I usually leave here and I'll go and read for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And I just listen then too.
Well,
and then I'm also kind of, what I'll do is each album, I'll research a little bit about that album.
Right.
I really want to go down the rabbit hole of everything they've ever done and all that. But I think what I've decided is once I get through this 100, this list of, you know, Rolling Stone's greatest 100 albums ever done, I think what I want to do is go back to 100 and then kind of delve deeper into
the artists.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just want to say this. This is what happened when I came into the newsroom this morning. Vic was at his workstation writing newscasts and researching and stuff like that, and he was listening, and I've been coming in and asking him what he's been listening to because you're going through these classic albums. And he's like, yeah, this one's weird. I've never heard this before. And it was Sympathy for the Devil by the Stones, and I almost passed out. I almost passed out because you said you'd never, ever heard Sympathy for the Devil by the Stones.
Don't know that song, no.
No, well, you're now digging into...
I actually had to stop and go, do I have the Rolling Stones on? Because it had like a, I don't know, samba or something.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You're now into Beggar's Banquet. That's the album that you're listening
Beggar's
to right
Banquet,
now.
Yep.
Which is a great record, which comes in a period of time where the Stones released about 6 albums in a row that were astonishing. So you're like right in the wheelhouse of the best period of time in the Stones' career. So
awesome.
you're in for a treat. But here's what we're going to do.
Well, I do, and by the way, and the Stones is a band I never really listened to. So I think I'm going to become a huge Stones fan.
I love
the other album. What was it? Sticky Fingers.
Sticky Fingers.
I loved that album.
Yeah, which a lot of people consider that's a lot of people think that's their favorite album. Their Stones' favorite album. Mine is Let It Bleed. Let It Bleed's my favorite Stones record. But it's all in that time period. It's all in that time period where they released like 6 albums in a row. Seriously, historically amazing records and one of the great stretches of talent and I mean at the height of their powers at that time. So what we're going to do is every Friday we're going to get a wrap up of what you've been listening to and what you liked and all that stuff. So just keep a tally of what you listen to each week, and then every Friday we'll come back and go, okay, let's find out what Vic is listening to this week and what he likes.
You got it.
And when we have to, by the way, when we do this on Friday officially, the first time we do the official Vic music check-in, I guess that's what we can call it.
A little unwieldy, but okay.
Vic music check-in. We will definitely have to talk about, Vic, we'll have to talk about your reaction to Captain Beefheart, because it's...
you can't do that on the air. There's no way.
The dump button's right here,
yeah,
Vic.
Man.
It's just going to be a bunch of dump buttons. That...
Yeah.
No,
so,
okay.
But anyway, we'll do it on Friday officially. I just wanted to set the whole thing up, because we talked about it this morning.
This is awesome, because I'm telling you, I love talking about it now. The music, I love it.
Yeah.
I love talking about what I'm learning, and learning about the musicians and the bands and the history, how they got the names of the albums. It's fascinating.
Well, we were also, you know, off the air here during a break, we were talking about controversial album covers, because the album that you're listening to now, Beggar's Banquet, there were 2 different versions of that album cover.
Yeah.
There was the one with the dirty graffiti and the dirty toilet, which is the original cover of Beggar's Banquet, and then they censored it,
mm-hmm.
and it was just a white cover that said Beggar's Banquet, and then we started talking about how Lynyrd Skynyrd had the same thing happen, Guns N' Roses had the same thing happen.
And that's when I said, now, Lynyrd Skynyrd, he's a singer?
Yeah,
and
your eyes
almost popped out of your head.
so we'll get the music update from Vic, and I really think it's completely awesome that you're doing this, that you're digging into this kind of stuff and wanting to listen to this music to get some knowledge. I think that's great.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
And I recommend it to anyone who is out there listening who has the same horrible lack, you know, just
Patty,
lack of knowledge.
Patty, you got are you listening to this?
It is so cool to go through and do this, because music really was not that important in my life, but I'm telling you, it is just really changing my whole mindset and everything, so it's fun.
Cool, man. Well, we'll check in on Friday, okay? That's Vic Vaughn, good. Who's in the newsroom, learning about music and reporting on the news. So that's what's going on. All right, speaking of music and lists, we have, according to Rolling Stone magazine, which is also the source of Vic's albums that he's been listening to over the past couple of weeks, they put together the 40 greatest Led Zeppelin songs of all time. And because Great Moments in Vinyl will be performing the first Led Zeppelin album and Led Zeppelin 2 this Saturday, we're going to dive into some more Zeppelin talk, considering that they're one of the greatest rock bands in the history of music, and have put out some unbelievably great songs. And I think everybody has their own favorites, their favorite albums, their favorite Zeppelin songs, and that's what we're going to get to here. This was the staff at Rolling Stone put this together. This isn't just one person. The staff at Rolling Stone, but I think it was six or seven writers, put this together and did a roundtable discussion, talked about what they think are the 40 greatest Led Zeppelin songs ever recorded. And they did put them in order. Now, I don't necessarily agree with this order, yeah, so but we're gonna jump into that, and I want to hear from you guys. What are your favorite Led Zeppelin songs? What are the best Zeppelin songs ever? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Now, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier at the beginning of the show about what's the difference. How do we refer to it as L, the elevated train? Is it EL? Is it capital E, lowercase L? Is it just the letter L, capital? Is it just the capital letter L with quotes around it? 847 area code said, I grew up near 4th and Linden in Wilmette. No question, it is the L, capital E-L, with exclamation points. We all hung out at the L station, capital E-L, which was famous for its great candy. All right. 309 area code says, I always called it the L, letter, capital letter L, but I never used it in print. So those are just some of the people talking about when we were talking about at the top of the show with the L. I mean, I grew up across the street from an L station.
Yeah.
You know, the Addison Brown line stop, or as that in those days it was called, the Ravenswood, the Ravenswood line.
Well, and growing up in the suburbs, we had mainly the train for us was the Metra,
right?
Because we had one, the Union Pacific Northwest ran through Crystal Lake, so we would always refer to it as just the CTA train.
Oh, really?
Yeah, until my mom, you know, acclimated me to calling it the L. But she was, you know, if people said, "Oh, I'm going to take the train," I would always say, "Which one?" The Metro train or the CTA train, and then I'd get beat up.
Yeah. Here's a nice little text. By the way, text in your thoughts, Zeppelin songs, anything that pops into your head, your favorite Zeppelin songs, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 773 area code says, hey, Nick, met your parents a couple of weeks ago at the senior lunch at Rocco Vino's. Yes, my parents do attend that pretty regularly, actually. I think at least once a week they go. They are lovely people, and your dad was the life of the party with all of his jokes. Oh, really? Really? He was telling jokes? My dad was...
That doesn't sound like him.
My dad was doing routines. He was telling jokes in a public place. I can't believe it. I'm shocked. Anybody who shops at the Jewels at Irving Park in Narragansett, my dad puts on a show there. He bags groceries and tells jokes. That's what he does. And there are people, and I'm not, this is not a joke, there are people who actively, no matter how long the line is that my dad is bagging, they will go on that line just so they can talk to my dad and hear him tell jokes.
I mean, they're good. Even when I call him every Monday morning,
yeah,
before we put him on to do the actual joke, I chat with him, see how he's doing.
Yeah.
And he tells me a different joke.
Of course he does.
He gives me just an extra little joke.
Yeah,
and I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course he does. See, the problem is my mom and I have heard all of them. That's the thing. You know, I've known my dad for my entire life, obviously. And so I've got 50 years, at least 50 years worth of jokes jammed into my noggin that my dad sometimes repeats. Not sometimes, a lot. Because he'll go back to his favorite jokes or his favorite, like, bits that he does. For anybody who's met my dad, you know that he does bits. He'll pull his wallet out. He'll say, hey, look at my new driver's license. Now, Tom, you've not met him face-to-face, right?
No, I have not. Okay. I have not had the pleasure.
So you haven't had the, here's my driver's license, and it's a picture of a fake driver's license with Larry Fine as the picture. He'd say, hey, I got a picture of my ex, and it's a card with an X on it. This is a picture of my ex. These are my three sons. He'll pull that out, and it's three sons in the sky. These are my three sons. So he's got, you know, the whole, he used to, I don't know what happened to it, but he used to have a wallet that was completely, it looked like it was made of bacon. So it was his bacon wallet. So he would keep all of his bits in his bacon wallet. So, I mean, he'll do that routine. He'll do that routine. Picture my ex, the whole thing.
Love it.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for those kind of jokes.
Well, you know, when you meet him face to face, when you meet him face to face, are you coming to Ghostbusters?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Well, then you'll meet him then. He'll do the whole routine for you. He'll happily do the whole routine for you.
And I will be enthralled.
Yeah. By the way, Ghostbusters, everybody, get your tickets now. It's Tuesday, June 11th, 35th anniversary celebration, digitally remastered on the big screen with incredible sound and incredible visuals. We will be watching Ghostbusters. It starts at 8 o'clock, June 11th. Get your tickets now because they're going pretty good. So you want to go to the website at amctheaters.com right now. Go to the seating chart, pick out your seat so that they're waiting for you on June 11th. Tuesday night, June 11th, the movie starts at 8. Obviously, Bill Murray's in it, so we've got a really cool thing partnering up with the Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant, which is right down the street at the Crown Plaza Hotel. They're going to give you 15% off all of your food purchases. We're going to have a nice a Ghostbusters party, and they're going to have themed drinks, special drinks, for that night. So come celebrate Ghostbusters. Come to the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant first. Have some dinner, 15% off on all your food. Then bop over to the theater. It's at the AMC Rosemont 18. And we'll see the movie. It starts at 8. I will introduce it. We'll talk about it afterwards and have some fun. And it's the 35th anniversary. Ghostbusters on the big screen. And I know that we're going to have some Ghostbusters people in costume. It's going to be a blast. It's only $10. Parking is free. The food and everything at Murray Brothers is obviously separate. But so the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant is going to have a lot of fun there celebrating Ghostbusters because Bill Murray is the big star of it. So get your seats right now. Reserve them right now. AMCtheaters.com. AMCtheaters.com. Go to the Ghostbusters, pick out the seats, and they'll be waiting for you. Again, $10. Parking is free. It is Tuesday, June 11th. Showtime at 8. Go to Murray Brothers Caddyshack, eat beforehand, get 15% off, and have some drink specials. It's going to be a blast. So, amctheaters.com right now. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to jump into some Zeppelin right here and talk your favorite Zeppelin songs. Talk or text with us at 312-981-7200.
There's a joke in the knowing very well. It's one of those that I told you long ago. Tell my word.
My favorite Elton John song of all time.
Really?
Yeah. Absolutely my favorite Elton John song of all time.
Well done.
So it was Sam, right?
Yeah.
Good taste, dude. Good taste. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. I got a feeling that in a couple of weeks we're all going to be sick of Elton John.
Yeah.
Elton John is one of these artists, in my opinion, that used to be good, but he sucks now. But he had so many great hits that when he plays in concert, all he does is pull out the great hits. By the way, my lovely future ex-wife Dana DiLorenzo went to the last show in L.A. that he did, and said it was she said it was unbelievable, and because it was just hit after hit after hit after hit, and he's got so many of them that even though like I haven't liked anything that he's recorded probably since the late 70s, like. I think it was like right around the early 80s when I started to go, all right.
Well, did you ever hear his stuff with T-Bone Burnett?
Yes.
I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, it was a little bit different. His early stuff, though. He and Bernie Taupin, that song right there is just amazing. And I mean, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road is great. All that early stuff, Captain Fantastic, all that stuff in the 70s was great. But I just got like, you know, by the time Can You Feel the Love Tonight was like, no.
Now, hold on there.
No, I know it's Lion King. You were like 9 when it came out. So
9?
Like, well, you weren't 9? Even born. You weren't even born when it came out.
1994.
Oh, so you were 1.
I was 1 year old.
Well, when you saw it, you were a kid, right?
Yeah, I was like a toddler.
Yeah. So I don't have the same emotional attachment to the Lion King.
That's fair. That's fair.
And by that point, I just thought Elton John was cheesy. But this movie, I from what I can tell, is about that prime period in his career,
as you would hope.
So all the songs are going to be good. I just hope the movie's good, man, because I don't want it to turn out to be another Bohemian Rhapsody. Because that time period in the 70s, Elton John was one of my favorite artists of all time. I mean, I had all his records. I played them constantly. And I can go back and listen to the old, you know, 70s Elton John, and it's flawless. It's great. But I just don't hope, I really hope they don't screw it up like they screwed up Bohemian Rhapsody. The difference is that the, you know, the person that the movie's about is not dead and has no defense, you know, and cannot defend all the lies or, you know, protest about how they completely made crap up in Bohemian Rhapsody that never happened. But Elton John likes the movie. He's hanging out with Taron Egerton all the time now. So I guess that bodes well. So I'll just have to see that after Godzilla, because I'm seeing Godzilla first.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I got my priorities, man. Elton John, Godzilla. I'm choosing Godzilla every time. All right. Classic music is what we're talking about. Zeppelin in particular. Great Moments in Vinyl are going to be playing Zeppelin and Zeppelin 2, the first two albums, live at Martyrs on Saturday night. So we busted out this Rolling Stone list of what they call the 40 greatest Led Zeppelin songs of all time. And we want to hear from you guys about Led Zeppelin. Rasko says, hey, how about calling the calling it Vic's Picks? That's a good idea.
I like that.
For the segment on Friday when we go, then we talk to Vic about the music that he's learning about and listening to. Morning Dew by Led Zeppelin is a great version of that song. Your dad is a happy light in the world. Thanks for the jokes. All right. Favorite Zeppelin stuff is what we're getting here. Talk or text 312-981-7200-630 area code. My favorite Zeppelin song is the ballad Going to California. I just love the guitar work on that song. Going to California is a great song.
Mm-hmm.
224 area code. My favorite is Stairway to Heaven. They hate that song, by the way.
Well, when you get something so popular like that.
Yeah. I still like Stairway. I don't care.
Oh, I
mean, and I can, you know, like, it's one of those songs. There are certain songs that have been played to death, but I can still listen to them. Stairway is one of them. Stairway to Heaven is a song that I can still listen to. I love it. And it's, I mean, I don't know. I've heard it thousands and thousands of times in my life. But it's one of those songs that I don't get sick of. Bill from LA says, for me, aside from Stairway to Heaven, I'll vote for Black Dog, which is a jam, or pretty much anything from Led Zeppelin 2 or Led Zeppelin 4. Zeppelin 4, everybody loves Zeppelin 4 because it's got, you know, it's got Stairway on it, and it's got a lot of the songs that became sort of their signature FM radio hits. Well, here, according to Rolling Stone, they're going in order from 40. In the evening, on the In Through the Outdoor 7-minute opener, Page augments his guitar with a Gizmotron. Jones plays an abified synth. Plant wails about loneliness, and Bonham makes like a crocked wildebeest. It's a nice marriage of Jones' power, love of electronics, and the band's innate rock power, as well as at last a sweeping anthem. I'm not a fan of In Through the Outdoor.
There's some stuff that I'm
there
like.
There
yeah,
are a couple
right.
of things on there that I like. I'm never a big fan of In Through the Outdoor.
I'm a fan of Bonham's beat on Fool in the Rain.
Yeah,
that Purdy shuffle.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah. It's just a record. I was not really thrilled with the direction they went in on that record. All the electronic stuff. I was just you know, as a guy who likes the old school hard Zeppelin, this direction they were going in with the synths and all that stuff. And I know it was John Paul Jones, like, was mostly creatively behind that, because at that point they were dissipating as a band. So this was a lot. I mean, you know, like, In Through the Outdoor is really pushed by John Paul Jones. And then next on here is All My Love. With a winding synthesizer solo by Jones, the majestic All My Love is only one of two Zeppelin songs not written or co-written by Page. It's Plant's mystical tribute to his son, Carrick, who died in 1977 at age 5. According to a friend, Page hated All of My Love, but because it was about Carrick, he couldn't criticize it. Okay, there you go. Oh, we got a break. Got a break here for the news. All right, the news is coming up, and then we'll jump into more Zeppelin. We want to hear from you guys. What are your favorite Zeppelin songs? 312-981-7200. We started walking and learned to.
Watching signs along the way.
I love that we're doing two for Tuesday, and but we're talking about Zeppelin, and we end up getting the Carpenters, which is not a bad thing because she had a voice of an angel. Who wanted to hear the Carpenters?
That was
Tommy Boy.
No, it was Paul.
Paul. All right,
Tommy Boy.
There you go. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. You get your request in now. One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. Zeppelin is what we're talking about. The Great Moments in Vinyl guys will be performing the first Zeppelin album, the second Zeppelin album, in their entirety at Martyrs Saturday night. Great musicians, great music, and so we're talking about Zeppelin. What are your favorite Zeppelin songs? And we've got a list here from Rolling Stone. Let's see. 708 area code says, I'm partial to Nobody's Fault. Nobody's Fault but Mine. Jam. Best song off of Presence. No, sorry, Achilles' Last Stand. Achilles' Last Stand is best song off of Presence. Steve says Candy Store Rock. Ooh, another Presence. getting some love for Presence this morning.
Presence is good.
Yeah, it's good. There's a couple of fillers on there, but like Achilles' Last Stand, Candy Store Rock, Nobody's Fault. Those are all jams. Carrie Carlson says, "Hey Nick, my favorite Zeppelin song is When the Levee Breaks." Can't argue with that. That's a hard one to argue. And I also love The Rover. That's a great song from Physical. Marco in South Deering says, Led Zeppelin, my favorite is Moby Dick and the Wanton song. And Sam says, my favorite Led Zeppelin song is the live version of Moby Dick. The live version of Moby Dick. Sam is a drummer, I'm guessing. It's like the live version. Moby Dick, 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 Dick. It's like 22 minutes long.
I know, but it's incredible. Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah, I can't do it anymore.
You can't?
No, man.
I'll listen to it every once in a while. As well, which movie? It's in one of the...
Song Remains the Same.
Song Remains the Same.
Yeah. It's from the album, the live album Song Remains the Same, from the movie.
Amazing to watch.
The movie's ridiculous. You know, the concert stuff is okay. That was from the 77 tour, by the way. So the concert stuff is... Some of it's good, some of it not so much. But everything surrounding it... is the stupidest crap I've ever seen. like the whole medieval crap that Page does, the car racing segment that Bonham does, and then the whole Who Stole the Money, Peter Grant running around, and it's just so stupid. And that, by the way, that movie, you can thank that movie for Spinal Tap. Because the guys who, you know, the guys from Spinal Tap, Michael McKean and Christopher Guest and those guys, watched that movie a couple of times and went, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. And they were inspired to do Spinal Tap because of how terrible Song Remains the Same is. And how ridiculous they act in it. All right, here are some other ones here that the Rolling Stone mentions. Traveling Riverside Blues, Four Sticks. Okay, no, at number 36, Since I've Been Loving You, way too low. Are you kidding me? That's one of my favorite Zeppelin songs of all time. 36. 35, Tangerine, great song.
I remember that from Almost Famous. They use it very well. They use it very, very well.
Yep. 34, The Rain Song. Again, this one's too low.
The Rain Song, it took me a while to come around to that.
Oh, honestly. I love that song.
When I was younger, I was like, well, this isn't Communication Breakdown.
Well, yeah.
But then you really get into it, and it's awesome.
Oh, I think it's a beautiful song. I think The Rain Song is absolutely beautiful. Let's see. Here's Richard on WGN. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Nick. Good morning. Where's Hot Dog on that list?
Yeah, Hot Dog's not. I would imagine Hot Dog's not on the list, considering it's the worst song that they ever recorded in the history of their music. So... Okay, there we go. There's just questioning about whether Hot Dog is on the list or not.
No hot dogs.
No hot dog. Because I hate that song so much. When I co-wrote Vinyl Shop, we did a scene where the three guys in the record store, because it was loosely based on High Fidelity. We saw it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a scene where, and you know, the character Barry, which eventually was played by Jack Black in the movie. My actor Matt O'Neill played him, and the three guys in the record store were comparing their favorite Zeppelin songs, and so their top five Zeppelin songs, which if you've not read High Fidelity or seen the movie, the guys in that movie, these Arrested Development adult men in the movie, spend most of their time making top five lists and comparing them. That's a through line for the entire book. And so we did the same kind of thing in the play. And so Barry, who is like the instigator, if you know the book, if you know the movie, if you were one of the few people that saw my play like 20 years ago, he's the instigator. So, you know, Rob and Dick do their lists, you know, and then he goes, all right, listen, let me start off. You know, you children have no idea what you're talking about. So we'll start off my number one all time Led Zeppelin song, Hot Dog. And it got a huge laugh every night. And they both, Dick and Rob, go, what? Hot Dog? Because I'm not done. Number two, Boogie with Stew. And then, no, that's it. We're done. And they walk out of the record store. They leave, and Barry's alone. He goes, nah, number three is Wearing and Tearing, because it's a good song off of Coda.
I'd be careful around me and Coda. I really like Coda. I think there's some cool stuff.
There's some cool stuff on it. I think it's an unnecessary record, but there's some cool stuff on it.
Yeah.
Wearing and Tearing is not one of them. But yeah, I mean, I bought it. Of course. So Livin' Lovin', she's just a Livin' Lovin' Maid, she's just a woman, which they split up from a Heartbreaker on this list, which is, you don't do that. No. I was talking about that earlier. You don't split Heartbreaker and Livin' Lovin' Maid apart.
You will never let Rolling Stone Records live it down.
Seriously, my friends and I went, what the hell? Because I don't even know what the next song. It was a different artist or something. And I went, you can't just play Heartbreaker. You can't do it. The Wanton song is on here. Moby Dick. Oh, here's another jam. In My Time of Dying. Oh, man. Physical's a great record. That's that, you know, you get more Zeppelin for your money because it's a double album. I told you the one of the first times I went to New York, one of the first things I did when I went to New York.
Yeah, you went to the...
I went to the building on the front cover of Physical and got my picture taken in front
still,
of it.
Is it still there?
Yeah. As far as I know, I haven't been to New York in a long time, but no, it was still there. Thank You, which is a beautiful song. No Quarter.
No Quarter's great.
Yeah, that's another John Paul Jones thing. I love No Quarter. I think No Quarter's great. Did you ever hear, are you familiar with Mock Tube?
No.
That's Reggie Watts' band.
Oh. Well, yeah. I'm familiar with Reggie Watts.
Well, Reggie Watts had a band called Mock Tube.
Mock Tube.
And this was in the early 2000s. And you should look it up. You should look it up. They do an unbelievable cover of No Quarter. Unbelievable. And I think they had two albums, Mock Tube, and they're great. They're really, really great. And some of the songs were used in The Wire. Actually used two songs from the Mock Tube album, the first Mock Tube album in The Wire. But, yeah, Mock Tube does an incredible cover of No Quarter. It's just, it's really great. Yeah, here, listen. It's a jam.
Wow.
Yeah. Now it's a jam. It's actually one of my favorite covers. It's unbelievable. Houses of the Holy. I love the fact that it's on Physical Graffiti and not Houses of the Holy. let's see. It was recorded for the album of the same name. They said it sounded too much like Dancing Days, so they resurrected it for Physical Graffiti. Dancing Days, another great album, another great song. 312-981-7200. Let's see. Trampled Underfoot makes the list. Possibly the funkiest Zep track. Let's see. Jones was inspired by Superstition, by Stevie Wonder Superstition. You got the page with the Wah Wah. You got Bonzo's proto-disco beat. Yeah. Trampled Underfoot. You a fan of Trampled Underfoot?
Big fan of Trampled Underfoot. That it's one of those Led Zeppelin songs of many that just kind of gets your blood going.
Yeah.
Like it gets you really pumped up, and I just love John Paul Jones, his keyboard solo in that. It rips.
Yeah.
It's super good.
Let's see. We got some more texts coming in here. 312-981-7200 for talk or text. We're talking about best Zeppelin songs. And go check out Great Moments in Vinyl on Saturday night. They're going to perform Zeppelin live. Get some of the best musicians. Lindsay gets some of the best musicians in the city together, and they're going to do some Zeppelin. 708 area code. This is Tony, who says, Rolling Stone has a lot of nerve to do a top whatever, anything Led Zeppelin, because Rolling Stone trashed them during their run. I love Zeppelin. To quote Jack White, I don't trust anyone that doesn't like Led Zeppelin. Yeah, they did. Well, they did, you know, they did that not to just Zeppelin. Rolling Stone has done that to a lot of other artists. Where, like, in retrospect, you go back and look at some of the original reviews that they did and some of the some bands that are now considered, you know, great bands, and they trash them.
Like, you know, hindsight is 20/20. Like, have you ever tried that Facebook memories thing?
You look at your memories when they give it to you? Yeah.
Yes, I think it was yesterday or early this morning. I looked at mine and I saw a review I posted of Star Trek Into Darkness. I gave it 8.5 out of 10. I don't know what the hell I was thinking.
Wow. Now, which one's Into Darkness?
That's the second Star Trek.
Is that where they try to do Khan again?
Yes.
It's terrible.
Oh, it's awful. And I don't know why I liked it so much. And it was from like so many years ago. And I'm like, what was wrong with me? What was I thinking?
I always get the J.J. Abrams ones mixed. My favorite one was the last one, the one that Simon Pegg co-wrote.
Oh, yeah, Star Trek Beyond.
I thought that was great.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
Better than Into Darkness, for sure.
Into Darkness was terrible.
Yeah.
I thought the first one was problematic. They've only made three, right?
Yeah, they did three with...
My favorite of the reboot, is by far Beyond.
Yeah, and that one's directed by James Wan.
Yeah, James Wan directed it. Simon Pegg co-wrote it. Let Simon Pegg write more. Whenever Simon Pegg wants to write something, let him write it. Get him and Edgar Wright together again and let them write stuff. 708 area code says, Kashmir is a Zeppelin song that gets to me since P. Diddy sampled it for the Jimmy Page, from Jimmy Page with Come With Me, speaking of Godzilla. That was a travesty. A travesty, and appropriate to be in that movie, considering how bad that movie is.
I remember that track was everywhere too.
Oh,
I was really young, and I still remember hearing that track everywhere.
It made me so mad. 714 area code, the Immigrant Song. I still have it on 45. They say beautifully used in School of Rock.
Yeah,
where they're driving in the van after they get accepted into the Battle of the Bands. I come from the land of the ice and snow.
Did you ever see, I think it was a DVD extra, they had Jack White playing live to convince Led Zeppelin to let him use it.
Yeah.
They're notorious,
yeah.
Or they were at the time, for not licensing their music off.
That's why Linklater named Dazed and Confused Dazed and Confused, because he couldn't get any Zeppelin. You can't make a movie that takes place in May of 1976 and have no Zeppelin on the soundtrack. Especially with the characters that movie's about. So he called the movie Dazed and Confused because they wouldn't give him any rights. He also couldn't get any Pink Floyd. So that's why Randall's last name is Floyd and his nickname is Pink. Because you can't make a movie and not mention, you know, Zeppelin or mention, you know, that kind of thing. So I know a little too much about that movie.
You think?
I've seen it a couple of times. All right, we'll take a break, and we got more Zeppelin to talk about. Yeah, man, Zeppelin. 312-981-7200 for talk and text.
Bless the beast and the children.
Lovely Karen Carpenter. Beautiful voice. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist and two songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Talking about Led Zeppelin in honor of our good friends, the Great Moments in Vinyl, playing Zeppelin and Zeppelin 2. And we're talking about their best songs, going through a list that Rolling Stone put together. By the way, I was scrolling through my Facebook during the commercials, And I love this. Now, you know that Robert Pattinson has been selected to play Batman in The Batman.
Robert Pattinson, yes.
Yes, Robert Pattinson for Matt Reeves. And obviously, you know, lots of fanboys are upset. You can't do anything. Well, we've all seen it for the past 2 days with the Game of Thrones thing. People just going nuts, you know, over stuff. But here's a news headline from thehardtimes.net. Did you see it?
Yeah.
Adult man still furious about decade-old movie for teen girls.
I use that to slam somebody on Twitter the other day because they were really upset about it.
Oh,
I'm
man.
Like, this is like a 26-year-old man.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on, man. Those movies came out 10 years
they
ago.
You were not the intended audience. They came out a long time ago. Yes, they were bad. But have you seen the work that Robert Pattinson and Kirsten Stewart are doing now? Shut up.
Yeah, Cosmopolis.
Just no, for both of them.
Yeah.
Both of them. If you would have like 10, 12 years ago said, you know, these two people are going to be like two of the most interesting actors that are doing great work and making bold choices, I'd be like, shut up. They're sparkling in a stupid vampire movie. But they're both amazing.
Because you know what they did? They made a ton of money.
Exactly
so that
right.
they could do exactly what they
exactly
wanted to do.
Exactly right. That's why John Cassavetes was in The Fury. That's why he was in The Dirty that's a
Dirty
good
Dozen's
movie.
Dirty Dozen's dope.
Yeah, that's a good movie. No, well, The Fury's a good movie, too. But that's the only reason he acted, was so that he could make Woman Under the Influence and Husbands and stuff. So, let's see. Here's Mark on WGN. Hey, Mark.
Hey, love your show, Nick, especially the other night with The Simpsons. That was great.
Oh, great.
That was great.
Thanks, man.
You bet. Real quick, I'll get to my point. I saw Zeppelin, I believe it was 1977, at the stadium, a Saturday night. Jimmy Page got sick. He came out. They started out with The Song Remains the Same. He sat on a chair. They went, I don't know, 3 minutes into the song, got up, walked off. They came out, canceled the show. I still have the ticket stub. They said, hold on to them. We'll reschedule. We'll honor those tickets. But regrettably, that was a year that Plant Sonnet died.
Yeah. Yeah. I was at one of those shows, Mark, at the stadium on that tour, and it was just, I guess, the entire, because they would always play 3 to 4 nights at the stadium when they came to town. And I went, they played almost a full show. It was about a little bit less than 2 hours. They normally played almost 3. And like you, Mark, that night, I think I went on a Thursday. I think I went maybe the first or second night. I can't remember. But like you, Paige was on a folding chair. He was so screwed up. He was on a folding chair. And they were terrible. They were awful.
Oh, they were. And The Song Remains, same movie, the same. It was the dumbest, most awful movie. I went to Michigan City, Indiana. There was a theater there at the time, and saw it there. The volume was at 2. I mean, you know, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Well, look. Look, nice talking with you. I don't want to hold up anybody else, but I love your show.
Thanks, buddy.
You guys. Okay, have a good day.
Take care. There you go. Yeah, Mark saw that at Michigan City. I saw it at the Hillside Theater. That's where I saw Song Remains the Same. My dad drove me and my buddy Dan Long, not the Dan Long that works here, but when I was a kid, my best friend was Dan Long, and we were both like maniac Zeppelin fans as kids. And so my dad drove us out to the Hillside Theater to see it, to see Song Remains the Same. And as a kid, I was like, oh, this is awesome, man. And then as I got older, I was like, man, this sucks. Zeppelin, man. Let's see. Here's also making the list. Babe, I'm going to Leave You. Fool in the Rain. Nobody's Fault But Mine, which, of course, we mentioned already is a jam. Heartbreaker, which is great. Dancing Days. I love that song. And it's great. Jamaica. Which was one of their biggest hits, like single wise. Gallows Pole, which is a great song.
That's a crazy song. I played that with some friends of mine in high school at like a house show. It was really fun.
I think Zeppelin III is a criminally underrated record. I think a lot of people dismiss it because it's not as hard as 2 and 4 or 1. It's very folky. And I think they're amazing songs on there, man. There's,
oh, yeah.
It's also got one of the coolest album covers of all time.
Yeah, because it had the rotating wheel.
Yeah, they had the rotating wheel.
That's one of the albums I still have from my dad, and he had written all on the liner notes and everything, so that's a little
That's nice.
I get to think about my dad whenever I listen to Zeppelin 3.
The other thing about Physical Graffiti is, too, you could change what's in the windows if you pull the sleeves out.
Oh, really?
The windows were cut out on the building, and one side of the inner sleeve has different things in the window, and then the other side has different things in the window. So that's the way Physical was, too. Song remains the same. We mentioned that song is a jam. Battle of Evermore. Not the biggest fan of Battle of Evermore. Not the biggest. Very Lords of the Ring-ish.
Which is why I kind of love it.
Over the Hills and Far Away, masterpiece. What Is and What Should Never Be, which is my favorite song off of Zeppelin 2. You know, I got a feeling that my favorite Zeppelin song is not on this list.
10 years?
Yeah. I mean, we're getting up there now, because What Is and What Should Never Be is 15. I don't think it's on this. Man, are you out of your mind? Not putting 10 Years Gone?
That's a great track, but, you know, it's from a big record full of great tracks.
Yeah, but it's the best song on that big record full of great tracks. The Ocean, I just love that song. That was a staple on FM radio, too. You would crank up the car radio every down, 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 down. You scrapes, that's it. Blow the speakers out.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, we have to break here, and then we'll wrap it up. We want to hear from you guys. Zeppelin fans, Zeppelin songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And we got the news, which is coming up next, right after this. You got me all screwed up. So much I can't turn around. And I've been running about with some funny girls. I'm not tough, tough. But if you let me down, I'll tell you, I'll give you the one day to explain. I love this band, The Outfield. I love them.
Great group.
And I get mocked incessantly because of it. But it's 2 for Tuesday. You made 2 for Tuesday! Who requested The Outfield?
That was Squat.
Squat requesting The Outfield.
He must have known something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love it. Did you see that sketch from Saturday Night Live about 4 years ago when Josh Hutcherson was the host from The Hunger Games?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was Josie's on a vacation. They lip synced the song.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of the funniest sketches I've ever seen. I'm telling you, I the first time I saw that sketch, I almost fell off my couch. I was laughing so hard. It's brilliant. Now here's a little piece of trivia. You ready for a little piece of trivia, Tom?
Love trivia.
Okay. They have a song called Since You've Been Gone, which is from their second album. And it is, first of all, it's awesome. And this is the thing, I've talked about this before. Every song named Since You've Been Gone is good.
That is true.
Because Kelly Clarkson's song is great. The Outfield song is great. The Cars, great. So anytime you name that, you name a song like that. But anyway, their song is Since You've Been Gone. It's a jam. And here's a little piece of trivia. Half of the video, because there's two locations in the video. It's a performance video. It's them performing, but they're performing on two different locations. One of them is a location that's used in the climax of Full Metal Jacket.
Hmm.
It's the location where the sniper is, where the it's with the burnt out buildings and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where they did the video.
They performed
at the but right in that area where the sniper, where they get the sniper,
yeah, yeah,
that at the end of the movie.
Oh my God!
Yeah, and it was the same year the movie came out. So that record came out the same year Full Metal Jacket did.
Huh.
And that's that in half of the set, one of them is in a different area, but
sure,
half of the shots, because they intercut between two different locations, you know, mm-hmm, like it's a video. So they do that. But part of it is the final location used in the last sequence in Full Metal Jacket.
Well, now I wonder if they'll sync up.
What do you mean? Oh, if well, you want to put the movie together with it? Yeah, okay, I see.
Kind of a weird juxtaposition, but you never know.
See, now that's a little piece of, next time you're at a party, you're gonna win over the crowd with that little piece of knowledge.
Yeah, I'll use that. I'll tell one of your dad's jokes, and people will shower me in affection.
That's exactly right. 224 area code, we're talking Zeppelin. By the way, 312-981-7200 for talking text.
Yeah.
312-981-7200. 224 area code says, all of my love has to be mentioned as a fave. And that Cadillac commercial ruined one of their songs. What Cadillac commercial?
It was a, it used rock and roll.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I knew it was in a car commercial. I just couldn't remember what make used it.
Right.
I'm pretty sure it was Cadillac, though.
Burger King ruined a Johnny Cash song. What Johnny Cash song?
Let's hope it wasn't Hurt.
No, God. You're gonna sell burgers with that?
You just see a guy sitting alone in a Burger King eating a Whopper to Hurt.
Jeez. That was a song that was that's another cover. When you want to talk about covers, that's a cover that's better than the original. The Johnny Cash version is just heartbreaking.
Even Trent Reznor has said, like, it's not my song anymore.
Yeah. No, it's not. That song belongs to Johnny Cash.
He's happy to give it away. He's like, Johnny Cash, one of the greatest singer-songwriters of all time.
708 area code, loves Tangerine. The song. Maybe the fruit. Mark the Breadman says, I love the Immigrant Song, especially when they use it in the final battle of Thor Ragnarok. Well, here's the thing. I remember when I first saw the trailer, because I was not crazy about either of the Thor movies, the first one or the Dark Village or whatever the hell the second one was.
The Dark World.
Yeah, okay.
The Dark Village.
But when I saw the trailer for Ragnarok, I was like, because they used Immigrant Song in the trailer, and I was like, well, it's about damn time somebody uses this song in a Thor movie. I mean, what is it?
Come from the land of the ice and snow?
Come on! Hammer of the gods! Come on! But they not only use it during the final battle in Ragnarok, it's used three times in the movie.
Apparently Taika Waititi used it in the sizzle reel for like how he wanted to make the
I'm
movie.
Not surprised by that at all.
And
leave it to him to actually go, hey, why don't we use an Immigrant Song here?
Yeah.
But yeah, even though it's really funny because I don't like the first two Thor movies, even though my favorite Marvel character is Loki. But I don't like the first two Thor movies. I like him. But he's great in Ragnarok. The use of Loki is great in Ragnarok. And the Avengers movie is, I think, Loki's shining moment.
Yeah.
In the Marvel series is in the Avengers movie. When the Hulk picks him up and just starts slamming him around. Let's see. Great show. How about Heart doing Stairway to Heaven at the Kennedy Center Honors for Led Zeppelin? Yeah, it made Plant cry.
Mm-hmm. They when I saw them when I was 15, they did Going to California.
Oh, well, they've covered Zeppelin many, many, many times.
They do a great job.
Ann Wilson, first of all, Ann Wilson, one of the greatest voices in rock and roll. And I'm not just saying a female voices in rock and roll. I'm talking one of the greatest voices in rock and roll, no matter what sex. 765 area code says, hey, what can I do? The B-side of Immigrant Song. And then 708 says, by the way, because of this Robert Pattinson Batman news, Twilight fans are trying to get Kristen Stewart to play Catwoman. All right.
Not a bad choice.
Is there a Catwoman in this script? Do we know?
I think so. Oh. I think they're going with the Batman Returns characters.
Okay.
They're going to go and do...
Are they going Penguin too?
They're going Penguin and Catwoman, apparently.
Oh.
Early rumors.
You get Kristen Stewart. That'd be awesome. That would be awesome.
They've got chemistry.
Yeah. All right. Number 13, Dazed and Confused. I would take the studio version over any live version of Dazed and Confused. Because he would go to like 45 minute solos. Like, I don't even know. He gets the bow out and just goes nuts. And then stands by the amp, makes weird noise for 15 minutes. I'm like, what the hell? But, you know, when you're blowing weed in the 70s, it's the coolest thing you've ever seen. He's like, oh, man, did you know? Moby Dick, they played Moby Dick. John Bonham played drums for an hour and 12 minutes, man. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen.
I only remember about 15 of them.
I only had an entire lid that morning, that night. I don't even remember what time of day it was. but we blew a lid and then watched Bonham play the drums for an hour and a half, man. They make a reference to that in the movie Dazed and Confused. I mean, I'm not believing it, because Slater says it when they're walking out of one of the classrooms. Slater says, I'm not believing that story about Bonham doing 45-minute drum solo, man. You can't handle that crap on good acid. we got Communication Breakdown. Great riff. Going to California, number 10. Here are the top 10. Misty Mountain Hop. Yeah, it's a great song.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Number 9, Rock and Roll. Number 8, When the Levee Breaks. Why don't you just put all of Zeppelin 4 on here? When the Levee Breaks, it should be up there. Immigrant Song comes in at number 7. Good Times, Bad Times. That's one of the greatest songs ever. Good Times, Bad Times. All right, number 5, Ramble On. You know what? My favorite song is not on this list. Ramble On is one of my favorite songs. But one of my favorite Zeppelin songs of all time, despite the fact that I have no idea why Gullum would slip away with his girl. I don't understand any of that at all.
Blowing Weed?
Yeah. Hey, man, I just read Lord of the Rings. I'm going to throw Gullum in this song, which has nothing to do with Lord of the Rings. He was in the dark, but he was in the darkest depths of Mordor. He met a girl so fair. But Gullum, the evil one, crept up and slipped away with her, yeah. For Kashmir, I mean, I can tell you a real quick story. They used to have these outdoor concerts. Well, they still do, but like back in the 70s, they would put like 3 or 4 bands together, and they would have outdoor concerts, and they would play. They would do them at Comiskey, and they would call them the World Series of Rock, real clever. And then Soldier Field, it would call them the Super Bowl of Rock. You see how that works?
Clever marketing.
Yeah. So one time, I went to a few of them. I saw Floyd on the Animals tour with the giant pig floating above Soldier Field. Insane. But this, we went to go see Lynyrd Skynyrd. It was Lynyrd Skynyrd, Ted Nugent, Journey, and 38 Special. And it was one of the hottest days. It was one of the hottest days of the year. I mean, the sun was beating down on us. It was terrible. It was me and my dad. Went. And so they had to, you know, this is how long ago this was. They had the actual water pumps. If you wanted to get water, you would go up and the big metal pump with the handle and to pump out the water. This was the 70s. So people were just going to these pumps. They had them dispersed throughout Soldier Field. And so the dude behind us, like a 2 rows behind us, pulled out a briefcase. He opened up the briefcase, and there was like 5 pounds of weed in the briefcase. And he put the weed on top of the briefcase and started rolling joints. So he's got all this weed on the top of his briefcase, and he's rolling joints and stuff. And you know, hey man, yeah. So someone comes with two giant gallons of water that they just filled up, and started going nuts and throwing it all over the place. Soaked his weed. Like, completely soaked this guy's weed. And then there was, of course, a big 70s fight. Like, the guy went after him. He went there. They had to call Andy Frame, security, come out. But this guy's weed was, I mean, it was completely, like, this guy just went, the guy with the 2 jugs was just, like, splashing it all over. He was trying to help people out, because it was about 150 degrees outside.
Right, right, right.
So he was just trying to get people, you know, a little bit wet and cooled off a little bit. But he soaked this guy's entire stash.
Not cool, man.
But at that same concert, in between bands, you know, they would play music over the big PA, obviously, in between. And Physical had just come out when Physical had just come out. And so they played Kashmir over the intercom in the middle of Soldier Field. And it got the biggest applause of anything, including like Lynyrd Skynyrd. The crowd went nuts when they just played the song on the PA.
Wait, you're telling me it was bigger response than 38 Special?
38 Special got booed off the stage.
Why am I, you know?
They're related to Lynyrd Skynyrd. That's his brother. It was Van Zandt's brother was in 38 Special, so that's why they were on tour with him. And by the way, that was the last show they played in Chicago before their plane went down, before Skynyrd's plane went down. That was the last show that they played in Chicago. So, but yeah, so Kashmir. And then number 3, they have Black Dog as number 3. Number 2, Stairway to Heaven. Number 1, Whole Lot of Love. But no 10 Years Gone, no Achilles' Last Stand. Those are omissions that will not be forgiven.
Jan Wenner.
Do you have a favorite Zeppelin song of all time?
If it's not Trampled Underfoot, there's something I have like a deep affinity for, like Poor Tom from Coda.
Okay.
I think that's really cool. I just like the drum beats. I'd probably say Trampled Underfoot is my favorite to consistently listen to.
Okay. Well, there you go. You guys want to get the last word in here? What are your favorite Zeppelin songs? And then we're going to move on to some pop culture coincidences that are really weird. But if you want to get in here for your final thoughts on Zeppelin before we move on, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. What I know is... Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, 2 for Tuesday. You hear me, 2 for Tuesday? That's the outfield. Yeah. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. We're wrapping up our Led Zeppelin talk. And then after the 3:30 news, we're going to jump into some very, very... Everything in the pop culture universe is somehow weirdly and strangely connected. And we've got some pretty nutty pop culture coincidences and connections that some might blow your mind. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And if anybody wants to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we'll talk a little bit more about Zeppelin here if you want to jump in. We got some texts that are in here. 262 area code says, I saw Song Remains the Same at a midnight movie and I was high as a kite and it still sucked. Yeah. Oh, man. Doc. Hi, Doc. Doc says, Nick, never saw the actual band, but a couple years ago I saw Les Zeppelin, world's most successful all-female Zeppelin tribute band, and they are unique. They're terrific. I've seen Les Zeppelin twice. Les Zeppelin twice. They're great. 773 area code says, hey, Nick, I also saw Zeppelin. Did they tour in 78, too, or just 77? Maybe the tour continued into 78, but I remember I saw him in 77. No, the tour got cut short. It was 77 because Plant's kid died. So the tour got cut short. I was in high school, and they were spot on. I remember Page with his double guitar and bow. Bonham's drum kit was on a mobile platform. It was at the Chicago Stadium. How old were you if you saw Zeppelin in 75? This listener is 58. I was 10 when I saw 10 the first time I saw him, 12 the second time I saw him. Yeah, I mean, the first time I saw them, they were just, and I was really just beside myself to be there. Because, you know, 10-year-old kid who, you know, not a lot of 10-year-old kids got to see Zeppelin. You know, it was really funny. Back in the 70s, if you went to concerts, you would walk in and it would just be a gigantic room full of weed smoke. Like, there was no hiding it. There wasn't people sneaking off. Blowing weed like crazy. It was like a John Carpenter movie, but it wasn't fog. It was weed smoke.
Well, now that might be a current John Carpenter movie.
Well, yeah, that's true.
As you well know.
That's true. But, and I'm a 10-year-old kid, and I would pass joints down, because what they would do was, in the 70s, people were very, very generous with their weed. Unless, of course, you soaked it in water and ruined it all. But they were very generous with their weed. So, you know, like one end of the row would start it. We would take a toke of a joint and then pass it to the next person. They would toke, pass it to the next person, and so on and so forth. And here I am. I'm a 10-year-old kid in the middle of the aisle. And, you know, joints are being passed, and I'm passing them to other people. There's no way I wasn't high, just contact high, when I went to these shows. No, there's no way. I mean, I'm not kidding. You get, and people who have been to concerts in the 70s, I'm not. You would walk in there, and I'm not exaggerating. It would be nothing but pot smoke. That's the only thing you could smell. Especially at a Zeppelin show. Actually, it was at every show in the 70s that I went to. But, I mean, it seemed a little bit more intensely potified at a Zeppelin show. They can't. You know what? I was like, oh, people thought I was adorable because I'm a little guy now. I'm only 5'8". I was really even smaller and looked younger because I don't look like because I'm going to be 54. I don't look like I'm going to be 54.
No, sir.
I looked even younger when I was younger. So I'm a 10-year-old kid. I looked like I was 7, you know? And so people thought I was adorable. I had the big oversized concert t-shirts that you could buy outside for $4. You could buy t-shirts. They were all bootleg t-shirts. People would make them up in their garage, sell them in a cardboard box outside the stadium. And they would stay with you one wash and they would stretch out all over the place. So I had my big Zeppelin t-shirt on, you know, and all that stuff. People thought I was adorable. Oh, look at the little kid passing weed around. Good for you, dude. Quite an experience going to concerts at the age of 10. Here's Adam on WGN. Hi, Adam.
Hey, how's it going?
All right.
Yeah, just driving on my way home, catching you guys, and my suggestion, one of my favorite songs, How Many More Times?
It's a jam.
Yeah, just great guitar riff and good drum intros.
Absolutely. It's a great, How Many More Times is a massive jam. Yeah, it's great. It's one of my favorite Zeppelin songs as well. All right, Adam, thanks, buddy.
Hey, what? One more thing?
Yeah.
Not necessarily only in the 70s. My first concert ever that my parents took me to was Asia at Poplar Creek. And I believe as a little kid, too, I was passing back and forth between people.
I love that your first concert was Asia. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, Adam, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, no problem.
It was the heat of the moment. That album was massive when I was in high school.
My girlfriend loves that song.
Oh, I love Asia. I think Asia's great. I think they're great. But that album, the first Asia album, oh my God. That was, everybody had that album. Everybody had that album, some of the other albums that were massive when I was in high school, that every single person on the planet had. The top two, first it would have to be Back in Black. Back in Black was, when that album came out, it was played everywhere. Everybody had it, and then Asia was right up there too. So, 630 area code says, I went to Illinois State U junior year 1988. My roommate and I played at least one Zeppelin song every day for the entire school year. By the way, 10 years gone is my favorite. I agree. 815 area code, Traveling Riverside Blues, man, great jam with that folky feel and ties to the lyrics from the Lemon song. Yeah, it does have the squeeze the juice, or squeeze my lemon until the juice rolls down my leg.
Yeah, I wonder what he meant by that.
I don't know. It's too subtle. 773 area code says, No Quarter is their favorite song. And by the way, a lid was an ounce, and it was $35. It was $35 at the time.
Wait, an ounce was $35 in 1977?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
An ounce was $35 at that time. Remember Green Monsters? Was that a weed reference, I'm guessing?
I don't know.
Yeah, they never called it. They don't call it a lid anymore. You just call it an ounce. But they used to say, man, let's go get a lid. I don't know where that came from. Well, there you go. Learned more about pot in this half hour than anything else. All right, we're going to take a break and then some really weird and fun pop culture coincidences. And that's after the news, which is coming up after this. So did somebody request this because I'm showing Ghostbusters?
No, I think they just want to hear some Huey Lewis.
It's just that's, you know, the same song as Ghostbusters, and there's a lawsuit to prove it. Did you know that when Ray Parker Jr. was brought in to meet with Columbia Pictures, that they said, we would like you to do the Ghostbusters theme? And he said, all right. And then they said, well, here. And they pulled out a boombox. They put "I Want a New Drug" on. They said, "We want something that sounds exactly like this." That's exactly what they did. And then Huey Lewis sued. Poor Ray Parker Jr.
He was just trying to have a hit.
Yeah, Huey Lewis. Who requested the Huey Lewis?
That was Ike.
Oh, of course it was. Of course it was. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we've got some very strange pop culture coincidences that we're going to be talking about here. Maybe some of them that you knew about. And this is from cracked.com, and we have a link if you want to check out these the pictures and stuff. It's linked up on our Facebook page, which is another reason why you should like us on Facebook. Follow us and check it out. It's facebook.com/NickDShow. facebook.com/NickDShow. So here's the intro. You know how movies and shows are laced with unlikely coincidences and chains of events? Well, hold on to your headwear. It turns out pop culture is littered with just as many uncanny connections among the various franchises. There are billions of little intersecting points that nobody talks about. So here are some of those weird sort of connections in the world of pop culture. Here's the first one. In the Avengers, the jet Thor throws the Hulk into in the Avengers is the same jet that was used at the end of True Lies.
Oh, nice.
I did not know that.
True Lies is a strange movie.
I do not like True Lies.
Not a big fan?
I like a couple of scenes involving Jamie Lee Curtis, but outside of that, not so much. Let's see. Here's another. Now, I didn't know that, though. I mean, True Lies is an old movie.
Yeah, it still has, and it hasn't been reissued since.
Mid-90s?
Yeah, something like that. It's hard to find on DVD.
94. I want to say it was 94. The only thing I remember from that movie is Jamie Lee Curtis dancing. That's the only thing that I remember from that movie.
And yeah, hit the nail on the head. July 15th, 1994.
Yeah. So basically, what I mean, 25 years later, you're going to use that jet in the in an Avengers movie?
It's a cool jet.
All right. How about this next one? To honor Queen Elizabeth II's 90th birthday, a limited edition ale called Purple Rain, R-E-I-G-N, was released. The name of that ale was a nod to the popular Prince hit Purple Rain, R-A-I-N. So in honor of the Queen and her reign, they released Purple Rain. Coincidentally, the beloved pop star died the day after the ale was released.
Really?
I didn't know that.
That's a little odd.
Yeah. Yeah, you know the Green Room story, right? About from the movie Green Room? That's one of my favorite weird sort of memories, is how people reacted when they said Prince. It was the day after Prince died.
Yeah.
And everybody started to go applauded, and it happened around the nation.
Yeah. It just goes to show how much of a event that was, sad event when we lost Prince.
Well, it touched everybody, I think. I mean, anybody, you know, who has ears knows Prince. You know?
I will say that I remember that day because I was in my senior newscasting class, and I was watching the TV, and it popped up that Prince was dead, and I was the only one that reacted like, oh my God, we have to do something on this.
Yeah.
Everyone else was like, why? It's just, I mean, it's like, it's sad.
Come
I was like,
man.
I felt truly alienated from an entire generation of people that day.
Yeah, I could imagine, man. I don't know. How do you not have a big reaction to Prince dying?
They just didn't get it.
One, he's Prince. Two, he was young. You know what I mean? Way too young to have died. And he was Prince. I mean, you know. All right, how about this? John Lennon and Dimebag Darrell were both shot by fans on December 8th. I remember... I remember vividly about when John Lennon died. I, like many people, heard it through Howard Cosell and Monday Night Football, because they broadcast the news on Monday Night Football, and that's how I found out that John Lennon died. I remember the next day at school. Everybody was, I mean, a lot of us were very affected by it. You know, I mean, John Lennon just got killed. And so, I went to Luther North, which was a Lutheran school. And so every morning we would have like announcements and prayer, like they would do a prayer every morning. And so one of the religion teachers, who was a very, very strong, opinionated guy, who was convinced that in 1980, 81 or 82 or whatever, when I went to high school, we were in end times, as he would say. And he would freak out 14, 15-year-old kids by telling them that the world was going to end. So this is the kind of sort of like really big time religious guy this was, taking it to extremes. He made the morning announcements and said, I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember the exact words, but he said, you should not mourn the death of John Lennon because he's going to hell and he lived a sinful life. And wow. The assistant principal at the time told me the story years later. This teacher was really well known for this kind of stuff. Like this is the kind of thing. I don't know how the hell he kept his job, because he was there for at least 3 years, because I was there for four, and I think he was there for at least 3 years. So, my principal at the time, assistant principal at the time, just began running down the hallway to the office where they would broadcast the announcements from, and turns his mic off and says, you can't say that to these kids. You know, to a lot of kids, this guy was a hero of theirs. But, you know, like, because he sinned and he did drugs and he had sex out of wedlock and, you know, protested things and possibly, you know, didn't believe in God. He was going to hell. So we should not mourn him. And I can't believe, and, you know, people who went to my school remember that day vividly. Like, I was still mourning the guy's death. And then I got to hear that the next morning. It was terrible. It was terrible. But it's a true story.
Yeah.
It actually happened. So, how about this? Quentin Tarantino's 1997 crime film, Jackie Brown, was cast by a woman named Jackie Brown.
Really?
But with no E on the end. J-A-K-I, Jackie Brown. She cast Jackie Brown.
She did a great job.
She did.
It's an amazing cast.
Let me ask you a question. Where's Bridget Fonda? What happened to her?
Bridget Fonda. Mm.
What happened to her? That's all I want to know. I want to know what happened to Bridget Fonda. I love Bridget Fonda. I think she's great. And I love her. I really love her in, well, I love her in everything, but I especially love her in Jackie Brown.
You know, she's married to Danny Elfman.
Is she?
Yeah, they got married in 2003.
Wow. I did not know that. Maybe I did know that, and I put it out of my mind. I don't know.
No, she...
She's married to Danny Elfman.
She was in Balto in 1995.
Is that the last movie she's... No.
Let's go. We got to go down. The last movie she is credited on here, I have, is 2001, The Whole Shebang.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was a terrible movie.
Yeah, and she, it's Monkey Bone, not exactly great.
Oh, I love Monkey Bone. I love Monkey Bone. The problem with Monkey Bone is that movie was taken away from Henry Selick and recut. His original cut is fantastic, but I think the theatrical cut that was released is still good.
Luckily we also have her in, obviously, Jackie Brown. Simple Plan,
single white female. She hasn't worked in 18 years.
Nope.
Wow, okay.
It seems like she was just like, yeah, I'm kind of done. She got married to Danny Elfman in 2003, and she's just, she's cool.
Well, I like her.
Oh, yeah.
And she's great in Jackie Brown. Everybody's great in that movie. Even Chris Tucker's great in that movie. Come on, man, I'm high, I'm home.
I got a lid.
Yeah, I got a lid. let's see. In the movie Troy, not a good movie.
I forget. Wasn't that written by David Benioff?
Was it? Because I know. I want to say that Wolfgang Petersen directed it. Directed Troy. Was it cool?
I'm gonna do a little
Wolfgang Petersen.
Yeah, by Wolfgang Petersen, and screenplay by David Benioff.
Okay.
Of Game of Thrones fame.
Yeah. And 25th Hour fame. More importantly.
Yes.
That wasn't a very good movie. While playing the role of Achilles, whose only weakness was his heel, Brad Pitt tore his Achilles tendon. Come on, man. That can't be real.
I believe it.
Oh, all right.
That probably would have set back production a little while.
You can't
really do anything. You can't do much.
No. And he's Brad Pitt. You can't replace Brad Pitt. So, all right, we're going to break here. We got more weird coincidences here to talk about, pop culture related. If you know of any and you want to jump in on the conversation, call or text at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, the temps will slowly climb to the upper 50s. Showers and possible thunderstorms at night and low. You know, I was just wishing we would have more rain in the forecast. I was hoping. Weren't you hoping that we would have a little more rain in the forecast?
If there's one thing I'd say about Chicago is that we're not enough like Seattle.
Yeah, we're not getting enough rain. Lows around 50 tonight. Tomorrow, lingering showers possible at daybreak. Afternoon temps will peak in the upper 70s or low 80s. For Thursday, high temps reach the low to mid 80s in most areas, turning cooler at night as a weak front settles across the area. Friday, chance of an isolated thunderstorm early, then partly sunny. Temperatures will climb to the 80s. Scattered storms develop late or at night. And then on Saturday, highs in the mid-70s to low 80s and scattered thunderstorms move in again. 47 degrees at O'Hare, 49 at Midway, and at 47 at the lakefront. Yeah, here in Blade Runner land, because that's where we live now. We live in Blade Runner. You know, it was really funny. It was raining like hell when my parents and I went to go see John Wick on Saturday afternoon. Have you seen the new G? You haven't seen it yet, have you?
No, I got my Dolby Cinema tickets for tonight.
You're seeing it tonight?
Yeah, going to see it. I think it's 6:30.
Okay, cool. Well, here's the deal. We come in. It's been, and as you know, we've gotten a ridiculous amount of rain over the past couple of months. Like absurd to the point where it's like it's just upsetting at this point. So, I don't know if you remember how John Wick 2 ends. Do you remember the weather in John Wick 2 at the end?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. We walk into this movie after like 2.5 months of rain, pouring as we walk into the theater. We walk in, movie starts, pouring all over Keanu, pouring throughout the entire movie.
It followed you.
Except for the scenes that take place in Morocco. Those are the only place. Oddly, there was no rain there. But every scene that took place in New York, pouring rain. And I was like, I can't get away from this. So, all right, we're going to break. And when we come back, we got more pop culture coincidences and more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Huey Lewis, twofer. Yeah, man, twofer. Huey Lewis. 312-981-7200. That's one of the most annoying music videos of all time. Because, and I love Huey Lewis, because it's all shot on these microscopic cameras that were put like on the drumsticks, that were put on the microphone, and they're giant, like, and the images are crazy, fisheye lens distorted, and that's the whole video. They put it on the end of guitars, they put it in, you know, they put these microscopic cameras in guitar picks at the end of guitars and the end of cymbals, and that's the whole song. And at the end of the mic, so you get to like look at Huey Lewis's mouth all distorted. And
yeah, it's a little jarring.
Yeah, no, it is. It's one of the most annoying music videos of all time. I love the song. Yeah. I love Hip to Be Square, but that video, I was
a lot closer than I ever needed to be to Huey Lewis.
That's what I'm saying. And I love Huey Lewis, but I don't need to be up his nose. All right. Hey, coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. So we're talking about when pop culture worlds collide and coincidences happened, and some of them are mind-blowing, like a woman named Jackie Brown cast the movie Jackie Brown. 815 area code has some comments about this. The 55 Chevy that was in the movie American Graffiti is the same 55 Chevy that was used in Two-Lane Blacktop.
That's very cool.
I think we knew that before. I think when we were talking about a couple of months ago, we were talking about movie cars, and I think that came up. Doc, good old Doc. Doc is back. Urban Dictionary states that the origin of the term lid, that's an amount of pot that you would buy specifically in the 70s. I'm going to go buy a lid. A lid was a measure of marijuana that was equal to a level lid of pot from a large Hellman's mayonnaise jar. The lid of a Hellman's mayonnaise jar.
Yeah. Well, you can measure your pot and you got a snack too.
Yeah. You might want to clean the bottom of that mayonnaise jar before you put your pot in there. You have mayo weed. Mayo weed used to do traffic on my show. Yeah, mayo weed! Traffic! All right. Well, good. I'm glad that we now have narrowed down why it's called a lid. I don't think anybody knew that in the 70s. I don't even think they knew what they were talking about.
Probably a lot of dudes at these Led Zeppelin concerts that you thought were just hungry, making sandwiches
they
somewhere.
They just wanted mayonnaise. They didn't even want pot. Can you do that with Miracle Whip?
No, that's Coke.
Yeah, that's for Coke, right? It is spicier. So here's another coincidence. Quicksilver appears in both the Marvel Cinematic Universe, played by Aaron Taylor Johnson, and the X-Men film series, played by Evan Peters. Not familiar. Who, remind me who Quicksilver is?
Quicksilver is the guy that runs real fast.
Like the Flash?
He's like the Flash. Did you see Age of Ultron? That's the only Marvel one he's in. It's the second Avengers movie.
Yeah, it sucked.
Yeah, he's the guy that runs real fast.
Okay.
He's Wanda's brother.
All right. And then in the X-Men film series. The X-Men film series, some of them I really like.
Yeah, there's some good ones.
Like, I like Days of Future Past.
Yeah, that's the one where he first shows up.
Okay.
That scene where he's running around the prison.
I like Days of Future Past. I love First Class. First Class, I think, is my favorite X-Men movie. And that's because, you know, they brought James McAvoy in then. That's when I started. I like the very first X-Men. The very first one was great. The first one that Bryan Singer did back in, like, 99.
Yeah, I would say those first two are pretty great.
Last Stand is terrible.
Last Stand is bad, but that's because it's Brett Ratner.
And I'm trying to remember. We got this Dark Phoenix thing coming out.
Yeah.
Which like it looks pretty cool.
It's like the 10th one, though.
Yeah.
Which, I'm, you know, not saying much compared to 23 Marvel movies.
Yeah.
But still, I'm just like.
But, I mean, you know, and again, McAvoy's in it and all, Fassbender. I love those guys. Let's see. By the way, so Evan Peters and Aaron Taylor Johnson both played Quicksilver in one in the X-Men film series and one in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Both actors previously aspired to be... Oh, they were both in Kick-Ass.
Yep.
I knew he was Kick-Ass. I knew Aaron Taylor Johnson was Kick-Ass. I really liked the first one.
The first Kick-Ass?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a great movie.
Yeah, and the second one, not so much.
And you know, the guy that directed that, directed not Days of Future Past, he did First Class.
Yeah, I did.
And unfortunately, Layer Cake, which is a bad movie.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. He directed Layer Cake?
Yep.
Wait a minute. What's his name? David.
I can't remember it off the top of my head. I know it's the same guy.
Well, he's directed.
Matthew Vaughn.
Right, Matthew Vaughn. But wait a minute. He's also the Kingsman guy, right?
Yes.
Oh, God.
You don't like the Kingsman?
No, I do not.
I like the first one. Second one was pretty much unwatchable.
Well, there's a third one already that they're doing. Yeah, okay. All right, how about this? The studio recordings for Hey Jude and Bohemian Rhapsody were done on the same piano. It was the 100-year-old grand piano at the Trident Studios in London. That's pretty cool.
Two of the most iconic piano parts in rock.
That's pretty cool. All right, how about this? In 1999, Liam Neeson portrayed... How do you pronounce the
Star Wars?
Yeah.
Qui-Gon Jinn.
Okay, Qui-Gon Jinn.
That's
Qui-Gon
fine.
Jinn.
That's fine.
A wise mentor to a character who is more well-known. A recurring theme with this mentor is not only controlling one's emotions, but channeling them. Feel, don't think. In 2005, Liam Neeson portrays Ra's al Ghul, a wise mentor to a more well-known character. He tells people that not only control their emotions, but to channel them. I know the rage that drives you, is what he says.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, maybe it's on this list, but between Jurassic Park and Independence Day.
Goldblum?
Goldblum. He uses the same line, faster, faster, we must go faster, and delivers it almost exactly the same way.
Is that right?
Yeah. Because he didn't care about Independence Day. He was getting a paycheck.
Yeah, well, I don't think anybody cared about Independence Day.
Made Will Smith an even bigger star.
Welcome to planet Earth! Shut up. Hey, I'll tell you what. It's a good thing they were Mac compatible.
Yeah, right?
Stupid movie. All right, we're going to break here. We got more crazy coincidences in the world of pop culture. We're also going to jump in a little bit later on and talk about where you get the best ice cream in the city and in and around the city. We've got this in Time Out Chicago put this together, where you can get the best ice cream in the city. So more pop culture coincidences and some ice cream talk coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. It's 2 for Tuesday. You mean 2 for Tuesday? We were talking about Zeppelin for a portion of the show here. Our good friends with Great Moments in Vinyl are performing Led Zeppelin and Led Zeppelin 2 at Martyrs on Saturday night. And then we started talking about some of our favorite Zeppelin songs and Zeppelin stories and stuff. So who for 2 for Tuesday chose Zeppelin?
That was coming to us from 773 area code.
773 area code, enjoying a little Zeppelin. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. And we are talking about some weird coincidences that are happening in the world of pop culture. Here's our next one. In 1996's Star Trek First Contact, Captain Picard, played by Patrick Stewart, gets confronted regarding his revenge obsession with the Borg by Lily Sloan, who screams to him, "Captain Ahab has to go hunt his whale." Picard then comes to his senses and even recites a passage of Moby Dick. 2 years later, Stewart played Captain Ahab in a Moby Dick miniseries. But that also ties into Zeppelin. So
I can't imagine that would be much fun to adapt. Moby Dick.
Yeah, well, it's never really been adapted very well.
Did you see his Moby Dick series?
Yeah, I did.
Poor, to say the least. All right.
It wasn't great. Which one is First Contact?
First Contact is I believe that's the first one with the Next Generation group.
Okay. So is that the one where Shatner gets two death scenes?
I'm not a huge Trekkie.
Okay.
But
I remember seeing that because they were passing the torch on to the Next Generation movies for the Next Generation. And, of course, Shatner gets himself two death scenes.
He earned it.
Here's one for you. The Fourth Kind starred Mila Jovovich. The Fifth Element starred Mila Jovovich and Bruce Willis. And The Sixth Sense starred Bruce Willis. See how that works? There's a little bridge. The Fifth Element is the bridge between The Fourth Kind and The Sixth Sense, between Mia Jovovich and Bruce Willis. And all of them are bad.
There's some real hold. So people really, really like The Fifth Element.
A lot of people like The Fifth Element.
I've only ever seen it on cable in parts. So I have almost no opinion.
I hate that movie. I don't like any Luc Besson movies. We've talked about this before. He's got a new one coming out called Anna, which looks exactly like Lucy or La Femme Nikita. It's like skinny model woman fighting guys, punching him in the face. I don't know. I just don't like Luc Besson's movies at
all.
That's fair. In Superbad, Jonah Hill's character has been saying, "This plan's been effed up since Jump Street, man." And then 5 years later, he starred in 21 Jump Street.
I'm waiting for another Jump Street, man.
I think those movies are funny.
They are super funny.
Yeah. And I didn't expect much at all. Expectations were so low on that movie. And then it turned out to be both of them are funny.
I think that's what allowed him to succeed, really, because it's written and directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
Yeah.
Who are incredibly funny guys.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. And I was just surprised. I, you know, I mean, that was the. I think those were the movies where I was like, oh, Channing Tatum's not just a slab of beef. You know, because I think he's very funny. I think he's very funny, in 21 Jump Street. It was the first movie where I ever just was like, I don't care about this guy. You know, I did like Magic Mike though.
Magic Mike's super good. That's Soderbergh, right?
Yeah, Soderbergh. He didn't direct the second one, but he did direct the first one. And McConaughey is phenomenal in that movie. He's phenomenal in Magic Mike. And you get to see a lot of Olivia Munn, which made me very happy. I didn't expect that. I just expected nothing but male nudity in that movie. And then I saw that Olivia Munn, and I was like, oh.
Equal opportunity nudists.
Yeah. How about this little weird coincidence? When Stan Lee conceived Tony Stark in the 1960s, he based the character in part on Howard Hughes. When Jon Favreau made 2008's Iron Man, one of the filming locations was the hangar where Hughes built the infamous Spruce Goose. So was that by coincidence, or did they choose that? As some sort of homage to the inspiration that Stan had?
I would say more likely intentional than not.
That would be my guess, yeah. That would be my guess. I think they knew what they were doing at that time. How about this? Harry Potter and Neil Gaiman's Books of Magic. Both series are about glasses-wearing English teenagers with a pet owl who discover a world of hidden magic hidden in plain sight. The first installment in the Books of Magic series was published 7 years before the Harry Potter book. Has anybody, has Neil Gaiman ever talked about this? Is he angry with J.K. Rowling? let's see. 708 area code says, same license plate number cut out of the shark in Jaws is stuck in the teeth of the tiger shark in Deep Blue Sea. Of course it is.
Gotta pay pay respects.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Deep Blue Sea rules. I love that movie. I love that movie. 847 area code said the 2012 movie The Amazing Spider-Man was directed by a man whose last name is Webb.
Yeah, Mark Webb.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those weird decisions where they were like, you know who should direct the next Spider-Man? The guy who did 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah. Yeah, which is a good movie. I like 500 Days of Summer.
It's a very good movie.
I can't stand The Amazing Spider-Man.
No, they're both terrible.
Yeah. How about this? The horses in the Game of Thrones battle of the bastards are the same horses as those in the finale of 2012's Les Miserables.
Some high-profile horses.
Wow, man. See, now that doesn't surprise me because there was like, you know, one grizzly bear that played every bear in every movie, and he passed away, and his son now. He's Jack, I believe, Jack the Bear. And now it's Jack Jr. or Jack 2. And he plays every bear in every movie.
Yeah, I mean, because it's like how many working cinema-trained horses are there out there? You're going to have some of I bet some of them were in The Lord of the Rings.
Oh, I'm sure they were. I'm sure they were. Yeah. Boy, Les Miserables. Oh, my God.
I've never been a fan of that musical, and then they had to make it even worse.
I liked it on stage. I saw it on stage, and I liked it. But the movie was just, I mean, my God, Russell Crowe. Oh, my God. Hugh Jackman was the only person that came out unscathed in that movie.
Because he's a Broadway guy. Yeah. He's a stage performer.
And Anne Hathaway can sing, too.
Right.
But, like, she won an Oscar. Next time I get a haircut, I'm going to sing and cry and see if I can win an Oscar. Because that's all she did. She got a haircut, she cried, and she sang, and they went, yeah, here's your Oscar. And I like Anne Hathaway. But that movie, you know, I had a screener of that. They sent out the screeners of that. You know, because I'm lucky, I'm very happy and honored that right around October, screeners start coming in of all the movies. And a lot of them I can just watch at home. It took me 5 viewings to complete Les Mis. 5 times. I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I had to turn it off. Uh, In John Carpenter's Halloween, like this one, this is an obvious one, man. In John Carpenter's Halloween, Laurie is seen watching The Thing from Another World. In 1982, the film was remade by John Carpenter as The Thing. Why did John Carpenter get the job? Because of his success with Halloween. That's not necessarily true. Because, you know, he followed Halloween with The Fog, which was a success, and Escape from New York, which was a success. It wasn't just because of Halloween.
Yeah, he had a track.
He had three successes in a row. And it's one of his favorite movies. Howard Hawks is his favorite director. Even though Christian Nyby's got the credit, the directing credit on it, it's a Howard Hawks movie.
Well, yeah, even if you buy it, like you get the DVD, it's called Howard Hawks, yeah. The Thing from Another World.
Yeah. And by the way, it's not strictly a remake of the from the one from the 50s.
Yeah, it's
based on Who Goes There. Both of the films are based on the short story Who Goes There, and that's, you know, in Carpenter's version, written by Bill Lancaster, who adapted the story Who Goes There, is much more faithful to the original story than the Howard Hawks movie is. And you can tell because both movies are really different. Like, really, really, really different. And Carpenter's movie's better.
it goes without saying, really.
Yeah. All right. Hey, why don't we take a break here for some weather? And then we'll come back, talk about more pop culture coincidence, and then jump into ice cream. If you have a favorite ice cream place in Time Out Chicago put together an article talking about where you get the best ice cream in Chicago. So we want to hear about that from you at 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6. And we're here until 5. Two for Tuesday. You made Two for Tuesday. More Zeppelin. And we got one more round of Two for Tuesday to get to before we get out of here. Here until 5. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. If you want to get in here, we've been talking about some weird coincidences in the world of pop culture that connect weird things. 312-981-7200. Here's the next one. What about the prop in Airplane 2, the sequel? There's the same prop that was used in Star Trek 2, The Wrath of Khan. And they don't know what the prop does in Airplane 2, the sequel. They're trying to figure it out. And Shatner's in both of those movies. So Shatner's trying to figure it out with the crew. And then it's on the Enterprise in Wrath of Khan. The same prop. And Shatner's in both of them, and I think they came out the same year. I want to say they both but they must have been shot, like, they're both Paramount movies. I think Star Trek 2 is Paramount.
Yeah, are they both 82?
Yeah, 82. They're both Paramount. They must have been shot like right next door to each other or something.
Yeah.
So they just used the same prop.
That's ingenuity right there. That's, yeah, Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's show business.
Let's see. In one of the last scenes he filmed as Albus Dumbledore, Richard Harris explains how when a phoenix dies, it's reborn in flames. He died not long after, but Dumbledore would live on, having been recast as Michael Gambon. And then now Jude Law.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Keeps being reborn.
Richard Harris's granddaughter, who said, if you don't do Dumbledore, because they offered it to him and he was going to turn it down. And his granddaughter said, if you don't do Dumbledore, I will never speak to you again.
A little harsh.
So he did Dumbledore. And it was his last role, too.
Well, you know, it's nice to leave on a high note in terms of, like, you know, he's beloved by like millions of children.
Yeah.
Now.
And Michael Gambon played him completely different than Richard Harris did.
Honestly, I'm team Gambon on that.
Oh, no, me too.
I like that he's a little bit wilder.
Yeah, no. I think they're both great.
They both do their own thing.
He did a different... I admire the fact that Gambon did not just try and copy Richard Harris's performance. You know what I mean? Like, he went in and he did his own thing. It's a different kind of Dumbledore. But, you know, the thing is, that series gets darker as it goes on. So it made sense for him to play Dumbledore with more of an edge, because Richard Harris played him as just a sweet old man, which was nice. It was fine. It was great.
It befit the role at the time.
Yeah, but as those stories got darker, those books got darker, those movies got darker, it was nice to have a Dumbledore with a little spine. The infamous murder house from American Horror Story's first season previously appeared in Buffy the Vampire Slayer in Fear Itself. The gang gets trapped in a frat house haunted by a demon. And similarly, in American Horror Story, the family has to deal with the ghost trapped in the murder house. So it's the same house that they used in American Horror Story and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I barely made it through the first season of American Horror Story.
Mm-hmm.
I made it through. I watched the whole first season, but I barely made it through. And then I've not made it through any season after that.
Yeah, it's got some serious super fans, that show.
Oh, I can't stand that show. I give it a shot because it's different every, you know, obviously it's a different thing every time, but I never make it past either the second or third episode. I always go, I can't do this anymore.
Is Jessica Lange in the first season?
Yes.
Ah.
Yes.
How was she in it? How'd you feel about it?
Well, I think she's great in everything.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just the rest of the show was like, eh.
Well, it's just so forced. Every season, it's just so forced. And I don't think it's scary. I think it's really simplistic. And I think a lot of the acting is really caricature-ish. And I didn't make it, you know, the was it Apocalypse when it opened up on do you watch it at all?
No, I did the same thing. I tried to watch and I was like, I don't.
It's too much.
It.
It's
not,
just
I'm not a big fan of Ryan Murphy.
Yeah,
I think he's done some cool stuff, and I respect that he's out there, you know, basically doing whatever he wants.
Well,
and that's cool, but
I like the People versus O.J. Simpson a lot. I think A People vs. O.J. Simpson is
probably
great.
The best of what he's done. For
and
me.
And I'm a,
you're a Glee.
I'm a Glee guy.
You're a Gleek.
Yeah, I'm a Gleek. No, there's no question about it. And I stayed faithful to that show long after everybody else left. People were like, "You still watch Glee?" And I'm like, "Yes, I do. Yes, I still watch Glee." yeah, and I liked Feud. I loved Feud. I thought Feud was great. So I'm a fan. I guess I'm a fan. I'm just not a fan of American Horror Story. All right, how about this weird coincidence? Zoe Saldana. By the way, Zoe Saldana is in some of the biggest movies. You know that she's in like the two biggest movies ever made. Because she's in Avatar and she's in Endgame.
Mm-hmm. She knows how to get the role.
Zoe Saldana's involvement in the Star Trek franchise in 2009 was foretold in The Terminal in 2005. By the way, this is how big a Steven Spielberg fan Eric Childress is. He likes The Terminal.
Is that the one where
Tom Hanks
he's like Russian
has that
or something?
Foreign, well, it's, no, it's some weird, vague foreign accent,
yeah.
And he's living in the airport? Oh.
I'm pretty sure my girlfriend really likes that movie.
But that's I just want to mention that's how much Eric Childress likes Steven Spielberg.
There's a couple Spielberg movies I might try to throw at him and be like, come on.
Oh, there's more than a couple. there's more than a couple.
There's a few.
Let's begin with AI.
Oof.
In the 2005 film The Terminal, Zoe played Dolores, an immigration officer / Trekkie who can be seen doing a Vulcan salute. Oh, I don't even remember that at all. That's pretty funny. She doesn't play a Vulcan, though, in the Star Trek.
No, she's Uhura.
Oh, she's Uhura. That's right. Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Tough Turf. Wait a minute. There's a they're referencing Tough Turf. You familiar with Tough Turf?
No. What's Tough Turf?
Oh my God. Tough Turf. T-U-F-F Turf. Tough Turf. Okay, it's a movie with James Spader, Robert Downey Jr., and Kim Richards, who was on Hello, Larry. People of my generation would know who she is. It is one of the weirdest movies, one of the worst movies you'll ever see. It's a low-budget sort of like James Spader plays this new teen in town who the wrong crowd hates, and they want to beat him up and kill him, and he starts pursuing the girl who's dating like the gang member. All right, here's what you need to do. Why don't you YouTube this? YouTube Tough Turf, I Walk the Night. Just YouTube that. I Walk the Tough Turf, T-U-F-F, Tough Turf, I Walk the Night. You want to, has it popped up? You want to play a little of
it? Is it We Walk the Night?
We
is
Walk
James,
the Night.
James Spader singing?
Yes. Well, he's lip syncing it, but yeah. He performs this song at a party to impress Kim Richards, and it makes all the other people mad. But just watch this.
Okay.
And this is We Walk the Night.
Fighting the darkness that breaks our hearts, we hold each other tight. I walk the night. I walk the night. Fighting the darkness that breaks our hearts, we hold each other tight.
There you go, man.
What is this?
It's one of the worst movies of all time. It came out. It came out the same year as Fever Pitch, by the way, 1985. Saw this movie at the drive-in with my friends, and we nearly peed ourselves laughing. It is awful. And James Spader doing that lip syncing, wearing bad 80s clothing at this party. Robert Downey Jr. with weird hair. So Tough Turf is an obscure film starring James Spader and Robert Downey Jr., whose characters can be seen walking past a wall painted with the New Avengers written on it. 30 years later, the two actors would meet again as Ultron and Iron Man in Ultron, in the Avengers Age of Ultron. I'd never caught that, and I've seen Tough Turf many times because We Walk the Night. So ridiculous. And then finally, the last one. The second time Susan Hill's 1983 novel, The Woman in Black, was made into a movie, the main character was played by Daniel Radcliffe. By the way, that version is great. The Woman in Black, it's really scary. In 2001, the first time in 1989, the year Radcliffe was born, the main character was named Adrian Rollins, also known as James Potter, Harry Potter's father.
That's nuts. That's actually a really weird one.
That is really weird. Really weird. And by the way, if you've not seen The Woman in Black, the version with Radcliffe, it's really well done and really creepy. I highly recommend it. Very, very creepy movie. All right. Okay, let's break for the news. And when we come back, it's ice cream time. Where are your favorite places to get ice cream? Time Out Chicago put together a list and an article about it. And we want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. That's coming up right after the news. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're here until 5 a.m. It's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Who requested the Derek and the Dominoes?
That was Glenn with two N's.
Glenn with two N's. All right. Now, is it just like, are we going to hear another Derek and the Dominoes, or are we going to hear Clapton?
It's going to be another Clapton.
Oh, so it won't be.
It will not be a Derek and the Dominoes.
All right. All right, well, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Let's see. So Time Out Chicago has put together their favorite ice cream shops in Chicago, and we want to get your opinions on that. It's going to be, at some point, it's going to be warm out. At some point, it's going to be warm out, and it won't rain. So we're looking for your thoughts on the best ice cream in and around the Chicago area. Now, here's some of the places that they picked. And I've only been to a few of these, I think. I don't go to a lot of ice cream places. I mean, it's not that I dislike ice cream. It's not something that I eat on a regular basis, though. But here's what they say. In Logan Square, there's a place called Pretty Cool Ice Cream, inspired by the memory of standing at the end of her driveway with change in her pocket waiting on the ice cream truck. Dana Sauls Cree opened Pretty Cool Ice Creams in Logan Square. The cute-as-a-button shop slings beautiful popsicles and fascinating flavors. Lick a peanut butter potato chip custard bar. Plant-based Blue Moon Pop or a strawberry buttermilk bar. If you close your eyes, you can almost hear the classic ice cream truck jingle from your childhood. Wow, that sounds interesting. I've never been there. So that's a pretty cool ice cream in Logan Square. If anybody, if you've been to any of these places and you want to comment on them, or you have some ice cream places of your own that you want to recommend, 312-981-7200. All right, so this is a classic one, the original Rainbow Cone in Beverly. For more than 80 years, the awning-covered picnic tables of this far Southside ice cream shop have been packed with locals indulging their sweet tooth. The signature five-flavor Rainbow Cone features layers of chocolate, strawberry, Palmer House, vanilla with cherry and walnuts, pistachio, and orange sherbet, stacked one on top of the other to form an unbeatable classic. Well, everybody's had the Rainbow Cone.
I just had it for the first time this year.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
So good.
Yeah, this other place, though, the other one that we mentioned, pretty cool ice cream, sounds pretty cool. Scooter's Frozen Custard in Lakeview. Walk into Scooter's and disregard the hot dogs, Italian ice, and anything else that doesn't contain the word frozen and custard. Purists should order a vanilla or chocolate and savor every lick of the cream-laden treat. If you're hankering for something a bit more involved, opt for the banana splice. Vanilla custard, banana, chocolate, strawberries, pineapple, and nuts. It's big enough to split, but we won't judge you if you're selfish. Scooter's Frozen Custard in Lakeview. Never been there. Jimbo says, if you want a real hot fudge sundae or a banana split, you should go to Dollop Candies on 95th Street, just east of Cicero in Loak Lawn. Or you can go into the same town to Primo's for some soft serve twist with chocolate dip. All right. Juliet Mike says, favorite ice cream, Peterson's in Oak Park. Been there many, many times. Been to Peterson's many times in Oak Park. They also have a location in Gilbert, Arizona that's recently opened, same owners. Another vote for Primo's in Oak Lawn. Great spot for soft serve. Do you prefer, do you have a preference, soft serve to the scoop?
I'm going to say soft serve because, yeah. You know, it's easier to eat.
Yeah.
It's nice, you know, and yeah, I just like it. I like the machines a lot.
Yeah.
I make the big twist with them and stuff. But really, I'll eat any form of ice cream. I'm partial to a place called, oh God, I just had, I think I'm pretty sure it's on that list.
Okay.
It's Lickety Split.
Lickety Split. Where is it?
That's in Edgewater.
Okay. All right. Sure.
Yeah. Lickety Split's real good place for ice cream. And they got all they got candies in there too. It's also a candy store. And, they got all the weird kind of obscure candies. It's not just like Snickers or something like that.
Oh, okay. Well, here's what Lickety Split is listed here in this article. In Edgewater. The Edgewater shop turns out rich and creamy custard, which you can get whipped into sundaes and concretes like the aptly named OMG. Chocolate or vanilla custard dotted with peanut butter fudge brownie pieces and a shot of hot fudge. As if that weren't enough, you'll also find cookies, cupcakes, beautiful chocolates behind the counter, and candy. There you go. Tom recommends Lickety Split, as does Time Out Chicago in Edgewater, Lickety Split. So obviously you can't talk about an ice cream place in Chicago and not mention Margie's Candies. You can't legally. Margie's Candies, this is in Logan Square. It's nostalgia that draws people in droves to this kitschy diner and ice cream parlor. Fancy silver trays, paper doilies, and saucers filled with chocolate and caramel sauces bring back fond memories for many who have made this place a tradition since it opened in 1921. Equally reminiscent of the good old days are the display shelves, which are crowded with memorabilia from the Beatles, who just had to have some Margie's ice cream after they played Comiskey. Legendary story. You didn't know
really?
That?
Really? No.
No, the Beatles went to Margie's, man. Yeah. Beatles went to Margie's. That place is great. And here's the thing. If you want to get some of the best ice cream in town and also, you know, like, go back in time, go to Margie's, but before you go to Margie's, go to John's Pizzeria right down the street. 2000 Northwestern, best pizza in the city, as far as I'm concerned. Best thin crust pizza in the city. John's. And then you can go to Margie's right down the street. Just walk right down the street to Margie's Candy and get some candies and get some ice cream and all that cool stuff. That would be a wonderful thing. Because John's Pizzeria. Oh, man, John's Pizzeria. God, I love that pizza. It's the best. It's the best thin crust pizza in the city. Here's Bill on WGN. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, there's one that, in fact, it's called Sean Michelle Ice Cream. It's named after a young lady who was killed in a car accident that my wife and I babysit for. It's in Brownsville. It's around about 40-something South King Drive.
Okay.
And they make all kinds of ice cream. It's really a good place.
Ah, all right, cool. You
know, it's soft serve with all kinds of flavors.
They have the soft serve, too.
Yeah, it's all soft serve.
Right? All soft
serve. They make it fresh every day.
Wow, that's cool. All right, great. Thanks, Bill.
Okay.
All right. Black Dog Gelato. After peddling her gelato all over town to the city's best chefs and markets, Jessica Oloroso found a fitting home for her first storefront in Ukrainian village. There she lures folks with boundary-pushing scoops of gelato, such as avocado cinnamon. Ugh. I don't know about that. And a sesame fig chocolate chip. If you're downtown, check out her stall inside Revival Food Hall for a quick fix over lunch hour. So she's got her gelato everywhere. That's Black Dog Gelato. You can find it in East Ukrainian Village. So I've not been to many of these places. Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams. J-E-N-I. Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams. This is in Lakeview. When Ohio-based Jenny's moved to Chicago, it immediately upped the city's ice cream scene. Sweet corn ice cream and black raspberry swirls? Check. The richest, darkest chocolate ice cream you'll ever taste? It's got that, too. When you factor in toppings like salted caramel sauce, the decision about what to order is that much harder. Luckily, Jenny's workers will provide you with as many samples as you want. Oh! Go in there and get some free samples.
Take them for a ride.
Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams. Never been there either. Lots of new places learning about here that I've never been to. So we'll get to more of it, too. We want to hear from you. We got some texts coming in. 312-981-7200 for phone lines or text calls. And we're talking about ice cream, best ice cream places in and around the city. Time Out Chicago put this article together. And we want to hear where you go for your great ice cream treats. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Technically, it's Derek and the Dominoes.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
The bigger thing is that he wanted a double dose of Layla, but he wanted the studio version.
Yeah.
And then the
Unplugged. Which I hate.
You don't like the Unplugged version?
No.
I think it's nice.
I hate it because that song is about, it's about pain. I mean, that's what the song is about, screaming in agony and pain over a woman. Not, hey, funky, kind of jazzy, ugh.
You know, you should have been on WNUA. I think you could have done pretty well.
But yeah, no, I never liked the Unplugged version. The studio version is amazing. The studio version is unbelievable. So, and how many songs were written about that woman between him and George Harrison?
Oh boy, far too many.
Yeah. All right. Hey, coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. That ends 2 for Tuesday this week. We'll do it again next week. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. We've been talking about ice cream places. Time Out Chicago put together an article detailing some really, really great places where you can get ice cream in and around the Chicago area. And if you want to give some suggestions, text or talk, 312-981-7200. Here's Brian on WGN. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Nick. I'm from Aurora, and back in the 70s, there was only one place to go, and that was Oberweis, the original store on Lake Street.
Yeah.
And what made it unique about it is that the whole back of the store was glass, and you could see all the guys in the white outfits, you know, making the ice cream and bottling the milk.
Yeah.
And it was always a great place. They had a great smell in there. But my favorite was Black Cherry, and I haven't seen that in years. And Butter Brickle. Oh, outstanding.
Yeah. Oberweis is great. Oberweis has great milk. They have great ice cream. Their dairy products are top notch. Always have been. Always. So.
Yep, it's a firm part of my childhood. It's a great place. Yeah. I still think I take my kids there. So
very cool.
Yeah.
All right, Brian. Thanks, man.
No problem.
All right. Yeah, I happen to. I drink a lot of milk.
Do you get delivered by the Oberweis?
I do not. I get the milk from the Jewels when I go shopping. But I would love to. I mean, I love Oberweis in the glass bottles.
Yeah, we had neighbors that used to get it delivered.
Yeah, when I was a kid, we got it delivered.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, I just happen to be. I'm very fond of dairy. Like, if I had some sort of restriction on dairy as a dietary problem, I would be really upset because I can't imagine not drinking milk or eating ice cream or eating cheese.
Cheese would hurt me.
Oh, I think it would hurt. I just don't understand how anybody cannot eat cheese, not like cheese.
I've switched to almond milk though.
Yeah, no,
it's not too bad.
No, man.
I'm cool with it.
Don't say that around Orion.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can't milk an almond. It's not milk. You cannot milk an almond.
Well, what do you call the stuff inside a coconut? Coconut milk, right?
Coconut. Well, yeah, coconut water.
Yeah, there's coconut water, but can't you get coconut milk?
Yeah, you can. You have to process it, though. The stuff that's in coconut is not milk. It's just the water.
And then it's coconut meat, right?
Yeah.
Why they it's not meat, it's not a cow.
Right. You can't meat a cow. No, but don't. Orion's very, very, very serious about milk and dairy products.
And, you know, realistically, I should defer to him because he is a legend. He's got a street named after him. I don't.
Well, yeah, you have to defer to Orion. He's the man.
Soybeans.
You want to know something really terrifying?
What's that?
You know who's been here at the station second longest to Orion?
Who?
Me.
Really?
Yes.
As an on-air per- Wow.
It'll be the Saturday, the 25th, which was oddly the same date that I was inducted into the Walk of Fame.
Very nice.
It was May 25th, 2017, when I got inducted to the Walk of Fame. This year, it'll be 34 years.
Wow.
Yeah. 34 years. Yeah. Insane. 815 area code says, good morning, Tom and Nick. Elam's root beer stand in Decatur, Illinois is the best root beer floats. Used to get them after Sunday night church in my dad's 72 convertible.
Loved a good after church treat.
Sure, man. 815 area code says, remember Prince Castle where the scoops were square shaped? Yes, 95th Wait. Street and Evergreen Park.
Square
shaped.
Cut them out?
The cones were square shaped. Like the scoop was shaped like a square. This is also at Cock Robin, which is right next to Gene and Jude's, right by the Thirsty Whale. Yeah, the whale. And they had special cones that had a square top to them, so that you could put the cone would fit into the square as opposed to the regular sort of round. So yeah. And they did that at Cock Robin as well. Cock Robin used to have the square cones. They were known for their square scoops.
That's wild.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that roll. You ever had that rolled ice cream?
Yes, I have.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's real good.
It's very good.
It's real good. 847 area code says Homer's on Green Bay Road in Wilmette. How about this? The Freeze in Logan Square. What is Logan Square, the ice cream capital of the city?
Just a lot of hip stuff over there.
The Freeze is a vintage time warp, and while there aren't nearly as many locations as the fast food restaurant, formerly known as Tasty Freeze. Oh, it really took its name from Tasty Freeze. Okay. Those were all over the place when I was a kid, Tasty Freeze.
I think my local ice cream place back in Crystal Lake, the Freeze, was...
What happened?
Nothing. Mary was talking to me.
Oh, does she want to come on the air?
You got... Hold on. Something to say?
Hey, Mary.
Yeah?
Sorry. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
So, no, I have a big traffic situation going on right now. Yeah, no, northbound in the Bishop Ford at Sibley, there's a fatal accident, and there's an investigation already going on. They had all the lanes blocked. They've just reopened one of them, but I would avoid the Bishop Ford heading northbound at this time because it's probably going to be blocked for at least an hour with an investigation going on.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just happened.
All right. Thanks for busting in, Mary. Sure, I appreciate it. All right, she's keeping an eye on the traffic, and we'll keep an eye on that situation as well. By the way, Mary Sandberg Boyle says, Homer's is amazing. It's worth the line. So another vote for Homer's.
Gotta try that Homer's.
This one from Mary. So the freeze, this one is loaded. You can still find the one in Logan Square, waffle and sugar cone. So it's basically Tasty Freeze, but it's just called the freeze. We mentioned Lickety Split. Sugar Shack in Bridgeport. This family-owned walk-up window is the stuff of that dreams are made of. From funnel cake sundaes to ice cream tacos to Italian ice and banana splits, you might just experience a sugar rush while browsing the menu. Order whatever makes your heart happy and take a seat at one of the umbrella-covered tables. You're in for a very big treat at this Bridgeport shop, Sugar Shack. All right. George's Ice Cream and Sweets in Andersonville. Sweet occasion fans can stop their morning. The ice cream slinger took over this place and is practically identical to the previous tenant, only upgraded. The walls are decked out in grays and dark blues. The food menu now includes hot panini, crepes, and waffles. And most important, the ice cream is the same. It's the Chocolate Shop from Madison, Wisconsin. The scoops are now offered in over-the-top sundaes, but save the cash and the sugar overload. The ice cream holds up well enough on its own. Annette's Homemade Italian Ice in Lincoln Park. Yeah, I know this. I've been to this place many times. Many times. How about Phil and Ruth and Phil's Scoop Shop? A darling ice cream shop in Humboldt Park. Small Cakes in Lakeview. Gone Gourmet Ice Cream in the West Loop. You can get ice cream topped with anything. You got milkshakes, malts, and you can also get ice cream topped with Lucky Charms. And then Cafe Gelato in Wicker Park. It's a Sicilian gelato bar. It's a little spot. They got chocolate to nuts and gelato machines. It's all imported from Italy. And they make great coffee drinks as well. So there you go. All right. There you go. Time Out Chicago put that list together. So there's ice cream. You can get lots of ice cream here in Chicago, and it's real good. So, hey, tomorrow on the show, it'll be Wild Card Wednesday, and we're going to talk about the Fight for Air ride. Which is this weekend.
No, that's the Bike the Drive.
Oh, Bike the Drive.
Fight for Air Ride is by the American Lung Association. That's coming up in early June.
Early June. Okay, we'll talk about that too. So that's all coming up on the show tomorrow, so make sure you stay tuned.